Oh, look.
Yes. Very pretty, isn't it?
Very. Where's it from?
From? It's not from anywhere. It's mine.
My dear, these are the people who stole it from me at the Louvre.
Hello there.
How very curious. Two thieves enter the Louvre gallery and come out with a bracelet. Couldn't you think of anything more interesting to steal?
Well, I just thought it was awfully pretty. A terribly unusual design. Of course, it would have been much nicer to have stolen one of the pictures, but I've tried that before and all sorts of alarms go off, which disturbs the concentration.
Yes, it would. So you stole the bracelet simply because it's pretty?
Yes. Well, I think it is, don't you?
Yeah.
My dear, I don't think he's as stupid as he seems.
My dear, nobody could be as stupid as he seems.
Oh.
This interview is at an end.
Good. Well, we'll be off. A quick stagger up the Champs-Élysées, perhaps a bite at Maxim's. What do you think, Romana?
I think a rather better idea would be if Hermann were to lock you into the cellar. I should hate to lose contact with such fascinating people.
Ah, oh, Duggan! What are you doing, for heaven's sake? That's a Louis Cairns.
APP Services, Le Vasi and Boop1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast number 213. I'm Adam, and the centuries that divide us shall be undone. And here is Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
That's all I need. Locked in a cellar, no way out, and two raving lunatics for company.
Matthew Kressel.
Are you talking philosophically or geographically?
And Mary Lang.
Running through Paris, we're running through Paris.
And this week we're going to be looking very, well, sort of paraphrasing very quickly at City of Death because there's been a time change and everybody is all over the place. So, right, I'm going to do it from memory because you might be surprised to hear, or not indeed, that I have actually watched this story on several occasions. So, right, it begins, I'm doing this from memory, remember? It begins with the sort of planet
that
we're not, yes, with the sort of a spaceship on a sort of planet. Obviously at this stage we don't know it's Earth, but it is indeed Earth, and there's this sort of monster in it, well, doing a lot of moaning and grumbling, and basically he's of order to switch a switch and this ship blows up, and then we have the Doctor and Romana sort of enjoying Paris on a sunny afternoon and being very sort of poetic and philosophical, visiting
and in love.
Oh yeah, it's true. And funny, and also having a great rapport.
Yes,
it really does show how the characters really do match each other perfectly. I really enjoyed their, because I mean, you wouldn't have thought that would work, would you? A two Time Lords, obviously of a similar sort of intellect. Usually, the companion is someone that says, "Oh, Doctor, what does this do?" But Romana already knew, but it still worked. It still worked beautifully.
Even though I like both Romanas, this story is the one that kicks me over to second Romana as my favorite Romana.
Hmm.
Same here.
I'll go along with that. Although to look at, number one Romana would probably be for me. But no, as a character, definitely second Romana. Like I say, they were doing a lot of what you would do in Paris. And unfortunately, I've never been close enough to Paris city centre to actually enjoy the cafes and the sort of things that they were doing there. And then we meet Countess,
and being totally ignored by the populace because
they didn't know
knew who they were.
Yeah, exactly, which was fantastic. Again, that worked beautifully. We meet Countess Scaglione and all the other superb little characters, including the professor, obviously who did survive
and
the shooting. That did survive the shooting at the OK Corral. Fortunately for us. His accent was probably a little bit better than his accent from Gunfighters, to be honest with you.
Yes.
But yeah, that was really good. I'll tell you what, though.
How's his Dalek accent?
More doubt about that. Julian Glover, I just love him in this story. I know I've sort of jumped ahead a little bit, but when I watch it, I'm just so enjoying his sort of suaveness until he gets a bit, towards the end, he gets a bit mad and manic, doesn't he? But when he's just sort of, just calmly saying things like that, But not good enough. Kill them. That sort of thing. The way he delivers the lines in his suave, calm sort of way. It's just fantastic. And that's what I enjoy most about City of Death is Julian Glover. But there's loads of other things to enjoy about it as well.
I haven't seen him in very many things. But did this influence Last Crusade, his performance?
Well, I think Glover actually talks about that a bit on the commentary, especially.
Wasn't able to listen to the commentary, sorry.
He does talk about that he does kind of see some pre-echoes of his performance, but also the way that the professor ends up getting killed reminded him a lot of the way his character gets killed in Last Crusade, the way the death is staged.
But in Last Crusade, is he not a baddie in that, is he? I can't remember. I've seen it.
Yes.
Oh, he is.
He's a baddie. He's introduced as a good guy who ends up working for the Nazis.
That's it.
Drinks out of the wrong version of the Holy Grail and ages to death right before our eyes.
Which is quite ironic, isn't it, considering he was in the Crusades, Doctor Who's story from the 1960s, and then he ended up in the Last Crusade. I'm sure loads of people picked up on that link.
Yeah, was also in, he played Colonel Breen in the Hammer version of Quatermass in the Pit, and also played the villain in the Bond film.
I knew you would get around to a Bond reference. There you go, Mary, how do you feel about that one?
I know, we can't get through an episode without Quatermass in the Pit or James Bond.
It seems like half the cast has been in James Bond at one point, because Catherine Schell was one of Blofeld's Angels of Death in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Julian Glover, we've already talked about. John Cleese, who shows up in the cameo at the end of the story, played R. Ben Q in two of the Brosnan Bond films, and Tom Chadbond had a small role in Casino Royale. So
I'm sure David Graham's been in there somewhere along the line. Anyway,
I checked; he hasn't actually.
That's surprising. Anyway, back to this story. They're enjoying themselves in some cafes, and there's like some artist that draws a picture of Romana. Now, obviously, there's a crack in time, which obviously had sort of echoes forward to the crack in time that eventually led us to the new 13th Doctor. Sorry, 12th. Sorry, Ben. So I better not go down that road, will I? After all the can of worms that's been opened up on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. But anyway, and of course, Romana goes on about computer drawings and stuff like that. And I think everybody would think, what would the point be of a computer drawing? Basically, these days, a computer drawing is just a photograph, isn't it, really? It's not really a drawing, it's just a digital. Anyway, I'm paraphrasing and I'm sort of rambling a little bit because I haven't got time to. So, So what actually leads to, that's right, because they go to the Louvre, don't they? And because Romana's talking about computer drawings, the Doctor decides to take her to the Louvre to show what real art is, and that's when the time slip happens again, isn't it? And the Doctor faints and grabs the Countess's sort of bracelet thing, and I think we have a really irritating.
Hit my head on your gun.
Yeah, that was funny. That was really good. But there we meet that really irritating guide that keeps on jumping at every tiny word anybody says. It's a bit like laughter in a Disney a channel situation comedy. And we use the term Disney Channel situation comedy in inverted commas because they're not funny. So therefore
Duncan does resemble Tintin.
Okay.
He does, yeah.
He does. Anyway, yes. Therefore,
he denied it on the bit of the commentary I did hear.
They end up in another cafe, but because the bracelet's been nicked, obviously the Count isn't particularly happy about this and sends some heavies off to find Dr. Romana. They do indeed find them. Of course, they also bump into Duggan somewhere along the line, don't they? Because Duggan's investigating them because of all the kerfuffle that happened in the Louvre. So they all get carted off to Scaglione's house, and there's a brilliant bit where Herman throws the Doctor into the room, and the Doctor says an extremely amusing line, and I've got it down here somewhere, so I have to say it. Hang on. There's no point in me writing it down unless I actually say it. I say, what a wonderful butler, he's so violent.
That was one of my alternate quotes.
Was it?
Same here.
Okay. Yeah, and of course there's that bit where they all get to sit down, and the Countess says about the box, isn't it? And Romana, she says, that's a highly valuable Chinese puzzle. You'll never get into it. And of course she gets into it instantly.
Yes.
And I think I had one of those, a box that opened like that when I was a teenager.
And yeah, well, I don't know about that. Rubik's Cube, I think they're called, aren't they, these days. Anyway, yeah, so the professor is meanwhile moaning about the lack of funds. Yeah, yeah. So, of course, that leads them to having to steal another, well, another thing, which would, because they sell the Bible, don't they?
The Gutenberg.
Gutenberg.
One of the Gutenbergs. What, yes.
The Gutenbergs.
Sell it discreetly?
Yes. That leads them to having to plan to steal the Mona Lisa. Oh, sorry, that's my clock. Do apologize.
Oh, hello, clock.
It's very loud today. Yeah, what did I get up to? Oh, yeah, so eventually the Doctor, Romana, and Duggan are imprisoned downstairs. But they manage. Of course, Romana makes a comment of the fact that the cell is smaller than it should be, and the Doctor ignores it. There's also a funny bit where they're trying to get out, and the Doctor can't use the sonic screwdriver, so Duggan hits the screwdriver against the door. And then eventually thumps it, or anyway, Doctor gets out and creeps up behind the professor and says something about the chicken and the egg and
reversing the polarity.
Yes, yes,
yes.
Yeah.
At this point, the professor hasn't realised, because his plans for the machine are to just make eggs into chickens quicker, so bring time forward quicker. Basically, that's basically what he's thinking of, which makes the professor laugh when he says about chickens, doesn't he? Later on, Scaglione.
Yes.
So there's a lot of escaping and being recaptured at this stage of the story. Eventually, of course, then the Doctor decides to go back to visit Leonardo da Vinci, meets Paco in da Vinci's house, which is a shame that he's only in, you know, this sort of very small part of the story, because I do enjoy Peter Halliday. And that obviously...
I guess I didn't realize that was him.
We didn't?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I'm glad I enlightened you on that one. I thought you were going to say something, so I was going to have a sip out of tea. Sip of tea out of my TARDIS mug. Right, so yeah, that's a big cliffhanger for that episode, of course, because he steps into the door, Captain Tancredi, or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I should be asking you, Doctor. And of course there's some quite amusing slapstick that goes on, you know, when the Doctor gets out of the thumb screws and he sort of attaches the thumb screws to the end of the sword and stuff like that.
Yes.
While he has a bit of a funny turn, doesn't he, because they all start communicating with each other. I think, is that just before Duggan punches him out? I think it is, isn't it? Punches out the count before they escape completely? Or is that, what did that happen previously? I can't remember that. But there's a point in which Duggan punches out the count for the first time, he's a bit grumpy after that, the count, isn't he? He's not quite his normal suave self.
Yes.
After the punch he turns a bit manic and grumpy. Of course, I have skipped over the bit where he takes his mask off at the end of episode one. And I always wonder, I mean, I have said in the previous time we reviewed this story, the fact that he's got one eye.
You're just always going to keep bringing that up.
It's probably one of those things where it's a sort of high-tech mask that's got some sort of vision input that allows you to see through the forehead, perhaps. I don't know. Got to make it work somehow. It's science fiction.
It looks like with all those convolutions on it, it looks like they'd probably just put a couple of pinholes.
One thing I did notice, though, watching it this time, and I'd always like it when you watch things hundreds of times and notice something.
It's not the world's greatest mask.
You can see through it and actually see flesh through it.
Yes.
I hadn't noticed that before watching it this time around, so there's something new I picked up from it. Anyway, so the Doctor comes back from the past with obviously having written "This is a fake" on several copies of the Mona Lisa, in felt tip pen. And
it always bugged me that Sarah Jane story bugged me because they didn't keep the continuity.
Yeah,
I agree with that one. Yeah. I have seen actually something recently on the Disney Channel. I think it's Wizards of Waverly Place, and I get forced into watching these things by Isabella. But there was a one of those episodes where there was a Mona Lisa on that similar thing that the characters had come out of the paintings. I will admit that probably was out before the Sarah Jane story, but the actress that they used to play Mona Lisa on that actually looked a lot more like Mona Lisa than Sarah Ann Jones did when she played the Mona Lisa in the Sarah Jane.
Yeah, I remember when I saw that, when we already knew she was going to be in The Doctor's Wife, and I was going, she's going to be horrible in The Doctor's Wife.
No, she's a good
because
actress.
She wasn't very good in that Mona Lisa story.
No, she's a good actress, though, Saran Jones.
Yes.
She really is a good actress. She's got her own detective show, isn't she, with what was her surname? She was in Midnight. Sharp.
Leslie Sharp.
Yeah, so she's got like a female detective series with her. They're the two stars.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that Scott and Bailey?
That's the one, yes. Well, I'm not a watcher. Yeah. I just know it's good because people keep telling me of this.
Oh, I watch it.
Rather like Sherlock is good, but I don't watch it, but everybody tells me it's good. So I'm sure it's a very good show, and I will get around to watching it at some point. Moving on. I got slightly distracted then. I was talking about Mona Lisa. You said about the continuity. I agree with that being a bit of a pain in the neck. I do like the way they set up the theft by doing a practice theft, using the bracelet as a means of projecting the Louvre around it. And that would work really well. And then, of course, they stole it for real. And of course, the Doctor now realises what's going on and goes about his business of stopping what's going on. Fortunately, Romana gets sort of kept by the Count and more or less forced to make the machine work, basically. And in the process of that, unfortunately, because he doesn't need the professor anymore, he says, this is the way I deal with fools. And
no, not that button!
Yeah.
And then he doesn't move, you know?
Yeah. And then he does a strange sort of dance. But I suppose, he did it quite well for the time. I thought it was okay. Bit of a shame. Bit of a shame he had to go.
It was just one of those Adam's humor things.
Yes, indeed. Mm. That's another thing that annoys me, really, because obviously this episode says it's written by David Agnew, was it?
Yeah.
It's just such a shame it hasn't got his name attached to it. Adam's name attached to it.
Well, that was BBC rules and regulations, because they had just come out of a period where BBC staff writers were bad about commissioning themselves to write scripts for things, and the writers' union in the UK had thrown a big fit about it. So there was a department pseudonym that had to be attached if under a circumstance that a script editor had to go in and rewrite something. But in effect, it's a David Fisher's plot with Douglas Adams' dialogue and Graham Williams, who was now the producer, doing the actual script editing job. Mm-hmm. So that was the reason why they put the David Agnew name on it, because you couldn't put it to one particular person.
Yeah, but it's
this is the famous story where that Adams used to always tell, where he spent a weekend drinking and with coffee and rewrote the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I would say, like I was just about to say, it certainly got, you can see Douglas Adams' blood flowing through the words of the story.
Yes.
But yeah. So this, eventually the Doctor comes along. I think this is where, that's right, because the Count jumps in the machine and goes back in time. Well, it's not the Count, he's Scaroth now, goes back in time. The Doctor turns up and they jump in the TARDIS.
He's always Scaroth.
Yeah, I know. Jumps in the TARDIS and they end up in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and basically, Scaroth gets punched in the face, knocked out, and Duggan saves history.
The most important punch in history.
Indeed. I know I paraphrase, but essentially is it. And it's really awkward because, obviously, going back to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group and a lot of stuff that Ben probably hasn't seen, because he hasn't got a computer, about him and his sort of extreme opposite views to most people. And Mary, I liked your comment in saying that, it's good to have differing views. I think sometimes Ben doesn't ever, once he's on a decision, he'll stick with it, whether it's right or wrong. He won't sort of deviate from his original, decision. And I think if he'd been here now, and I'm pretty sure at the time he absolutely loved this story, but I don't think I've ever heard of anybody that said they don't like the City of Death, although I haven't listened to any of the feedback we've had so far, any of the two or three feedback messages we've had so far. So we'll find out in a minute. But yeah, I mean, you can't really fault this story. The only thing you can perhaps fault is, mate, like you say, the mask, some of the
Prehistoric Earth isn't realized that well. The string on the spaceship, but I
yeah
And this the fight. Fact that educationally, 400 million years ago, there was life on Earth.
That's wrong.
I think the dinosaurs had died, didn't they?
No, that was 60 million. There wasn't any atmosphere back then, so I don't know what they were breathing.
There was 400 million years ago.
I know, no atmosphere, but there they were.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, Mary, because people at the time actually wrote into the Radio Times about that. And when Adams reused some of his elements from this story and also Shada in Dirk Gently's Holistic Investigation Agency, which had a sequence where they went back to the same point, he did actually write in that everybody was wearing oxygen masks and whatnot because there was no atmosphere for them to breathe.
Oh, okay.
So he did keep that in mind later on.
Well, as I say, you can't. This is obviously one of my top two favorite stories of all time. So I there's no point in me going on about the superlatives of it.
And the other is,
The other is. Well, you know what the other one is.
Is it Pirate Planet?
Yes, it is indeed Pirate Planet. Kirby, what do you think? As if I really need to ask.
Really? I mean, he's blastering it all over Facebook.
The absolute masterpiece, one of my all-time
favorites. No, not the Mona Lisa. I'm talking about this story.
What?
You said it's a masterpiece. I'm talking about this story.
Probably this is... Is it my all-time favorite? No, but it's up there in the top five. It is my favorite of all the Adams stories.
All of my stories. Thank you very much.
I like it better than Pirate Planet. Sorry, Adam. it's just I can watch it over and over and over again because it's just so brilliantly Douglas Adams. And you know how I am with Douglas Adams.
Of course, it is lacking K-9, unfortunately. That's the only thing I suppose I would have liked to have seen.
Since I am known for quoting Douglas Adams every Thursday... I can't say much more except it's just absolutely brilliant. The dialogue, just brilliant.
Mary.
Yes. you ought to put her last because she's going to be.
Oh, all right. Best still last. Go on then.
She's going to be different.
Matthew.
I'm going to be Ben.
Well, this is. Somewhere in my top 10, I don't think I've ever actually made a top 10 list, but I suppose if I had to make a Desert Island Discs version of Who and had to pick stories I would take with me, that would be the only stories I'd have. This would be one of them. It's a story that I think often when I have friends who are new series fans who haven't seen a lot of the old series, it's one of the places I take them to.
Yeah.
Because... Point. If you can look past the cosmetic issues, the mask, for example, which actually it wasn't until I watched this a little while ago, I actually watched it for the first time on a Blu-ray player on an HDTV where it was actually upscaled that I actually noticed, as you guys mentioned, the business you can see flesh through the mask. I'd never noticed that before on a standard definition TV, and you wouldn't have noticed that in 1979 anyways. Listening back to the Dr. and Douglas documentary from BBC Radio 4, which, if you haven't heard, go look it up. It is a superb documentary.
Yes, I have it.
Stephen Moffat, in fact, notes that when Russell T. Davies brought the show back in 2005, he gave a bunch of stories to Julie Gardner because she was not a fan, didn't know the show. And this was a story she latched onto. And with him as, this is what we want Doctor Who to be like. And it's got... As Gareth Roberts said recently in an interview, that a lot of the dialogue and stuff here and the way the story is paced, you could do this as a new series two-parter.
Cool.
And nobody would bat an eyelid at it.
Exactly.
It would still work today.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I love the location stuff in Paris. I love Lala Ward's performance in this, and I will say this
is the music. I love the music in this.
Yeah, it's very
good.
I agree.
The music is superb, and it is a shame that the original music wasn't kept. And though the original music is now lost to us, there's some wonderful fan reconstructions out there, including by Dr. Phil.
Yeah, someone just posted that on Facebook.
Including by Dr. Phil's Well-Tempered Schism Group, which if you haven't heard, please go listen. It's got cosmetic issues, but I think if you're willing to look past those cosmetic issues, it's a wonderful story.
Thank you very much. Mary?
I found it a very pleasant way to pass the time. because it's probably Adams's most, as I said, most accessible script. It's one of the ones where he, one of the few where he isn't so self-referentially mocking of the sci-fi genre. You know, where you feel like you have to be a geek to understand all that he's making fun of. I found the music, you know, pleasant, but tedious. How many times can you hear the same theme before it's like, stop it? Think of something else.
But it's
running
so
through
great.
Paris. We're running through Paris. I mean, how many times can you hear that?
Mary, do you feel the same way about Murray Gold's music in the new series when he reuses, like, I Am the Doctor, for example?
Because I find his music more complex, I don't. But I find, like everything else in this story, the music, I mean, and it's very, very consistent with the 70s. There were so many movies and TV things made with, you know, simplistic, repetitive themes. In the 70s. I just accept it as being, you know, part of its era. Whereas Murray Goldberg's music is more a part of our era where
I wouldn't say Murray Goldberg because you've got Doctor Who fans
on
the show.
I'm sorry, Murray Goldberg.
And unfortunately, people make
you said Goldberg.
Yes.
I did. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, so keeping it within its time frame, yeah, but it's not something that I would go back to repetitively because I think I got everything I could get out of it the first time through. I like a little bit more of a complex story, something that sets me thinking. I can pick few, if any, faults in it. Like I said, it's a very pleasant way to pass the time, and it is a good story to send someone who's not familiar with the classics to for that reason. It doesn't require a lot of background knowledge to enjoy. So, you know, I'm not saying I disliked it. I did enjoy it a lot. I don't have a ranking for it because I haven't seen all that much classic Doctor Who yet.
Brilliant. Thank you, Mary. So there you go. That's our thoughts on City of Death. Obviously, we're going to move straight on there because I did relate earlier on to the fact that on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, please join it. Everybody seems to be doing so at the moment because I'm just about to welcome our new members. But I did sort of allude to a conversation or a comment thread in which Ben Shoveler has been criticised for his views, basically. And I just mentioned him not being on or not having seen them, but he's just actually commented on that thread as we were speaking. So
yes.
Oh, really? I need to update.
And I think he doesn't seem very happy. So I'm hoping things don't get a bit out of hand with that one. But obviously, I will say, though, some of the comments towards Ben have been a bit strong. Not too strong, but maybe a little bit strong, so you maybe understand he might sort of take exception. I did try and jump on his defence because I thought things were going a little bit too far. But, so obviously, please comment on things on the 20 megabyte thing, but don't take it too far into the line of insults. I think that's probably the best way of looking at it. Would you not agree? No? Okay, fair enough. I'll just say that. That's fine.
Sorry, I was reading Ben's comment.
Yeah,
I was as well.
Okay.
I would almost say if we weren't running late this morning, I would almost say bring him on. But no, someone was running late this morning.
No, I was running on time. You were running early. I think that's probably the best way of looking
you
at that.
You knew about the time change, Adam.
Yeah, but I would never be able to record at 9 a.m. though, because I'm taking Isabella to school at that time, so it would be impossible for me to. I'm not going to get into an argument about it. All I wanted to do was welcome
this
new members.
Is this a 5-minute argument or the full?
Yeah, well, we'll have to look at that comment thread in a minute. Right then, does anybody remember who Ian said was my last welcoming two weeks ago?
Ian just posted
that,
which was posted. Please tell me because I've got them all up on the list.
I'm trying to refresh.
Oh, good.
The last people who were welcomed were in this order: Christopher Lockery, Gary Garden, Tommy Fisher Becker, Mackenzie Williams, Carlo Robert DeShouten, Justin Goodwin. Ishi Huvian, Carvey Quinlivia, however you pronounce that.
Right, yes.
TJ Ariz, A-R-I-Z.
Yeah.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Right, that's where we're up to, is it? So if I pick it up from Sanchez Cousins, Joe Smith, Sean Cowgill, William Garitti, or Gritti. Sorry about mispronouncing names. Carl Griffiths, Gene Ridler, I recognise that name.
Yes.
Stuart Wilson, Nanette Usulton Clark, John Michael Lindsay, Martin Wilson, Troy Purcell, Michael Hickerson, and Paul Brooks. Willkommen to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. And if you want to send feedback into the show, 20mb.feedback@gmail.com, which segues me into the feedback section. Right, okay. Ian, who sent in some feedback for last week, told me not to bother playing last week's feedback because he's sort of elongated it a little. So,
a bittle.
And I've just opened up the wrong file. Let's see if I can open up the right one. Here we go. Right, so hopefully this will work.
Does that mean we can't read along? Oh, no.
What do you mean read along?
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. If the suggestive remarks on this podcast get too much, you can complain on the Facebook page. Now I'm going to try pushing the envelope. I do not see what the fuss is about. And it was one of those envelopes with a see-through window. City of Death by someone or other.
Exquisite. Absolutely exquisite.
Yes, we'll talk about the podcast there, of course.
When Clara Oswald turned out to have multiple lives in different periods of history, many fans pointed out this was like Scaroth. I've heard reviews of this story say that the Countess should have noticed that her husband was not normal.
Indeed.
I think perhaps she believed men were all like that.
Oh my God.
He's not the man she thinks he is at home. No, he's a rocket man. The butler shoots Scaroth at the end because he does not recognise him.
Yeah.
I say, what a wonderful butler, he's so violent.
I don't think felt-tip pen writing would show up on an X-ray, but I'm sure a lead paint would. So that is what he should have used.
Indeed.
The Mona Lisa has changed over time. The varnish has been renewed and darkened, and exposure to light for hundreds of years has changed the colours. I think hidden copies would be easily distinguished, but the little joke at the end requires this to be ignored. The Fourth Doctor was reluctant to destroy the Daleks, but was happy to make sure the end of the Jaggeroth happened, because it had already happened. It is several years since I saw the final story of Star Trek The Next Generation, but I seem to remember Captain Picard had to ensure that a burst of radiation that started life on Earth was not prevented.
Yeah.
Just like in City of Death.
Yes, that's right.
Star Trek was all right, but they did not have Eleanor Bron. Bye for now.
Thank you. That was Ian Kirk.
Thank you, Ian.
Oh, thank you, Ian.
Thank you, Ian.
One more bit of feedback, although I might relate to the comment thread on the 20 Megabyte group later, is this.
Some of us still have to leave it.
Well, good afternoon, 20 Megabyte. Andy Lenny here. It's 12:48 on Sunday afternoon. I've just finished my brunch of yoghurt and fruit and fibre. I thought I'd sit and talk to you about City of Death. Been not doing this about a month's time, because in 3 weeks' time we will actually be in Paris, going out to watch the Harlequins playing Stade Francais at rugby. That's sport, Kirby, so we'll have a quick break while you snore. Thank you. Yes, so I'm going to try and see if we can do some of the location spotting off the Louvre. Should be fairly easy, but I'm sure I can find someone online, a guide to the destinations of this. Now, yes. It's actually a delightful story. It really is Douglas Adams at his finest. Interesting, you have a lot of running around streets, as we did last week with the Dalek Invasion of Earth. And the wonderful music, very whimsical style of music. I think the music really does add to the whole story and really does help to set it all up. That's something to look forward to. Now, the story itself is very good. It's I think it's fairly formulaic, isn't it? That you've got an alien who's trying to save himself. But it's the way that what he does will actually end up not destroying the Earth, but actually not creating mankind and all of life kind. So I think that's quite clever. Duggan is an excellent foil to the Doctor. I mean, playing really quite a buffoonish character who's hit first, talk afterwards.
I wish they kept
Romana's state about, you know, you can't... If you're going to cook an omelette, I expect to see a kitchen in flames and an unconscious chef, which is probably about right. But Duggan does act as a counterpoint to the intelligence of the two Time Lords in the story.
Yes.
And also, again, in a way, acts as the everyman. You know, he's the people watching it. So he's the ones reacting to what's going on around him and ask the questions that perhaps you and I as viewers would be asking this. So Tom Chapman really does play very well. It's a shame he doesn't come back in Earth-Authority. I've got a feeling, didn't somebody use him in a Big Finish story somewhere?
He did come back to Doctor Who.
I may be wrong about that, but no, I think he's one of the best non-recurring characters that we've actually seen in a Doctor Who story. Now, you do have the standard scientist in Kerensky, who is a massive intellect, but actually no common sense whatsoever. You know, then the Jagaroth, they're the ones who want all the chickens. I mean, yes. He just can't see what's actually going on in front of him, can he?
No.
So, fairly formulaic. Well played by David Graham. It's, you know, seeing him again, 2 weeks after seeing him in the Gunfighters. So, that was quite a novelty. The Countess. Yeah, again, you would say a dumb blonde. You said she wasn't blonde, but, you know, did she actually not really see what's going on? How on earth can she be with this man for so many years and not notice the fact he's got a rubber face? You know, that's a bit that doesn't work for it, I think, for me, certainly. I don't know what other people think of that as well, but, I mean, when they're, well, let's not go too far, but when certain things are occurring, you might actually notice that it's rubber or latex and it's not actually flesh.
It was dark.
Herman, yeah. Standard character, standard heavy. What happens to him at the end? Does he actually, because he throws it, thing at the Scaroth and presumably kills him, but does he die in the explosion or does he get out? You never know. And the guard, the torturing guard with cold hands, I think that's a delightful touch that was. You can see there's a bit of rapport between him and the Doctor. You know, when the Doctor takes his picture and talks about how the Duke mad, or Captain Tancredi, I think was his name, wasn't it? Quite mad. And of course you have the cameo of Eleanor Braun and John Cleese, an exquisite, you know, talking all the utter bollocks that art critics do talk, and talking about the TARDIS, and then when they get the Doctor and Romana and Duggan get in and it takes off, it's just, they accept it for being a piece of art and don't actually question the fact that a large police box has just disappeared from in front of them. So again, I think that's Douglas Adams' finest. He just puts in such wonderful whimsical things into a story. And just takes you on a flight of fancy wherever you want to go. So, I think it is really a very well done story. Now, I was going to try and get the lovely daughter to say something, because I was watching it, She actually remembers seeing this story. She would have been 7 at the time in 1979, because she's a wee slip of a lass. And she remembers actually terrified by the Jagaroth when, she saw his face. So, yeah.
I don't quite know what's going on there.
She just wanted for some reason. Right. Notice when we take
don't quite know what's that going on there. Really, it's not me.
That's not me.
City novel, but wonderful, very happy, with a subject as well.
Maybe I should listen to these before actually putting them on.
There you go. Be seeing it.
Yes, that unfortunately is on the original audio, that particularly, so I do apologise for that, but thanks anyway, Andy.
Can I touch very quickly on a couple of things he raised, if I may?
Oh, sorry, what he writes,
He raised, at the very end, talking about the fact there wasn't a novelization for this. We know from what Gareth Roberts said a couple of months ago now that there is a novelization of this coming out that he is writing. It'll be out, I believe, in May of this year, I think, maybe next year. Could be a little later in the year. Also, Tom Chadbon has done some work with Big Finish. He was in an Eighth Doctor audio called No More Lies, but I think his more prominent role is as Harry Sullivan's half-brother Will in the second season of their Sarah Jane Smith audios.
Right, thank you. By the way,
I'll have to listen to those.
Indeed. Obviously, when I was talking about the comment thread on the Facebook group, would everybody agree that Ben has a right to reply?
Of course.
He's just sent me a message saying, I'll be back home in an hour. I'll let you know, and I'll speak to you on Skype. So later on in the show, you won't be around, Mary and Kirby, unfortunately, but later on Ben will be, and he'll probably be quite cross. But I have this facility called editing. Oh, yeah, you can stay on, Matthew. Please, that'd be nice. Help me. Right.
Well, I'd love to, but I have to get some sleep at some point, and I have a distinct feeling it would probably just turn into an argument between me and him, so...
No,
sleep is overrated.
No, we'll see what happens anyway. Right then, so it's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
I know I probably won't.
Good grief, say that every week. Right.
You know the story better than I do.
The first question goes to Kirby.
Master.
What power setting is Scaroth ordered to set his ship to get it off the planet at the beginning of the story?
Power 3, of course.
Correct. Mary.
Yeah?
Where are the Doctor and Romana going philosophically?
To Paris.
No. Anybody?
No. Lunch.
Correct.
I don't know.
Matthew.
Yum.
How much money initially eases the professor's cash flow situation? Oh, why can't I ever read it properly? I'll do that again. How much money initially eases the professor's cash flow situation?
Is it 100,000 francs?
It isn't. Anybody?
No. 1,000,000 francs.
It is 1,000,000 francs.
By the way, how much would that have been?
I don't care.
In some real money.
I don't care. Kirby. What years were Leonardo da Vinci's lifespan? And if you can get both of them right, you'll get double points. If you get one of them, oh, just get on with it. I'll give you points depending on how accurate.
I have no idea.
Oh, thanks for help. Thanks for trying, even. Okay, you're not going to have. You're not going to have a guess.
Anyone else? No, don't know either.
Anybody?
No idea.
Oh, good. You didn't get that one. The answer was 1452 to 1519. Right, Mary.
Yes.
What's that blooming say? I think that should have been the... What was the bracelet that the Doctor took from Lady Scarlione? What actually was it? What was its purpose? It had a name.
Okay, I don't know.
Anybody?
No.
Nope. You didn't get that one. It was...
No. Nope.
Micromesum scanner. Right, Matthew.
Yes.
What was Scarlione's first name?
Ooh.
Oh. I don't remember one ever being mentioned.
Clearly it was, otherwise it wouldn't be a question.
Was it count?
One! Yeah, go on, sorry.
I honestly have no idea.
Anybody?
No.
You didn't get that one, and it was quite an easy one. It was Carlos. Or as they would say on the Bigger on the Inside podcast, which is coming to an end, listeners, they would say Carlos. It's Carlos.
Oh, of course. Yeah, at the very
of
end
course,
of part one.
Just before the part one end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, crap. Kirby.
Master.
Where is Scarlione when we first see him take off his mask?
In a room in his house. I don't know what room it is.
Grief. Anybody?
The cellar/laboratory.
Yeah, that's the one. Mary.
Yes.
What does the Doctor say after he is first thrown into Scarlione's lounge?
What a wonderful bodyguard. He's so violent.
Hang on. Let him get the words. Sorry. Let her get the words out. Sorry, Mary. Say that again.
Well, what a great bodyguard. He's so violent.
I'm going to give you 2 points of that, even though it's not word for word, but I thought you did a really good job on it. It's, I say, what a wonderful butler. He's so violent, but it's near enough.
Butler, yeah.
Matthew.
Yes.
When the Doctor thinks he can get away, where does he plan to eat? This is from that lounge situation, obviously.
Oh, Maxim's.
Is correct. Right, so after those rounds of questionizings, in last place with 2 points is Mary, in second place with 3 points is Kirby, and in the lead with 4 it's Matthew. Right, and, yes?
And those are charity points at that.
No. Kirby.
Master.
When the sonic screwdriver does not open the door, what does Duggan do?
He
tries to hit it.
He does. He bashes it against the door. Mary.
Yes.
Yeah.
What are the Doctor's first words to the Professor?
I don't remember.
I know.
That's a shame. Matthew?
Yeah.
What came first, the chicken or the egg?
Correct. Matthew. Oh, I've given you too many points.
I need too many points.
Right, Matthew, what does the professor call his machine?
The Wayback Machine.
He's not going to get this one. I'm not.
I actually have no idea.
Anybody? It's all gone quiet, and you didn't get that one. It's a cellular accelerator. Right, Kirby.
What is the professor's
full name?
Yeah. Excuse me?
What is the professor's full name?
Kerensky.
No, his full name.
Professor Kerensky.
Nikolai, I don't know.
I'll give you a point for Nikolai. Go on then, Matthew.
Really?
Theodore. Theodore Nikolai Kerensky.
That's the one. Right, Mary.
Yes.
What colour is the lamp that Duggan throws in the cellar?
You're kidding.
No.
What colour is the what?
The lamp. He throws the lamp in the cellar. He throws it at. It is. Spot on. Matthew.
Yes.
What dynasty of Ming vase does Duggan smash over Scarlione's head?
Fourth?
No. Anybody?
Second.
Yes. Right, and after that round of questions, the scores are as follows. In last place with 4 points, and a creditable 4 at that, Mary. In second place with 6 points, Matthew. And in the lead with 7 points, Kirby. And this is Kirby's question.
Master.
Who is Leonardo away engaged on important work for?
Who are they? The Borgias.
What? No, there's a person he's in. Never mind.
Oh, I know.
I know you do. Go on.
Captain Tancredi.
Correct. Mary.
Oh.
How old is Romana?
125, or so she says.
Correct. Matthew.
Yes.
What town and year does the doctor go to visit Leonardo da Vinci?
1508.
Nope. Anybody?
1505.
That's the year. Do you get the town?
No.
Florence. Oh, it was Florence.
I know I didn't hear the town. No,
I said that. I did say that, didn't I, Mary?
I don't know.
No, if you said yes, I would have given you a point. Right,
it was somebody else's question, so I wasn't listening.
Never mind. Right, this is your question. No, it's not. It's Kirby's question.
Master.
How long ago did the Jaggeroth destroy themselves in their war?
I don't remember.
What? Pay attention. Right, anybody?
400 million years ago.
Oh, I'll give you both.
Who said it first?
I'd have to replay the recording on that one. That was impossible.
Give it to Mary. She needs the points.
I'll give it to Mary.
Yes. She needs charity points.
Yes. Give Mary the point.
Right.
She knew it.
You're right, so then. Generous, Matthew.
Right, then, this is Mary's question. What makes the doctor cry out in pain while about to be tortured?
Oh.
Mary.
I can see it. I don't remember, though. I don't remember.
It's a shame. Anybody?
Oh. The guard having cold hands.
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
If there's one thing I can't stand, it's being tortured by someone with cold hands. What do you want to know?
What is Scaroth's motto?
Whose question is this?
This is Matthew's question.
Oh. Scaroth has a motto.
He does. Something he cries out when he's having, when they're all communicating with each other.
Oh,
for the love of God, I can't remember.
No, it's not that. Anybody?
No.
The answer is, the centuries that divide me shall be undone.
That's not a motto.
Yes, it is. He does. He says it loads of times. Be quiet. Right then. Right. Right. The current scores then are in last place with 7 points, Mary. In joint first, with 8 points each, it's Matthew and Kirby.
Ooh,
therefore, this is Kirby's question.
Master.
What was Duggan's previous line of work as a detective?
I know.
Divorce stuff.
I'll give you that. Divorce investigations is near enough. Right then, Mary.
Yes.
What is Duggan's favourite activity?
Smashing doors, I think.
I would say smashing windows.
Quite. I'll give you a point, but anybody to,
yeah,
to get
he, what it breaks things.
Thumping people?
That's the one.
Oh.
Word for word. Okay. Right. Matthew.
Yes.
Which of Shakespeare's works does the Countess take out of the cupboard?
Hamlet, a first draft.
Correct.
In the doctor's handwriting.
Indeed.
Right. And last three questions. Kirby.
Master.
What did Romana rig the component she made to do?
I don't remember.
What?
I know.
Oh, it's to take him back, but just for 2 minutes?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's when my audio was going out, and I didn't rewatch that episode got a better copy.
Mary?
Yes.
What TV series has had John Cleese been producing to enable him to cameo in Doctor Who?
I know.
Whoa. Don't know.
Okay, Kirby.
Oh.
Faulty Towers.
Correct. Last question. Matthew.
Yes.
Where will the TARDIS's landing place be by Scarif's ship eventually become... I'll start that again. Where
can
would
I just answer the question and save you from having
so
to...
So as the listeners understand what the question is, where would the TARDIS's landing place be next to Scarif's ship eventually becoming present day? I think that makes sense. Go on, Em.
Yeah, the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
Correct. And the final scores are... In last place with a very creditable 9 points, Mary.
Yes. Every one of them earned with sweat.
In second place with a very disappointing 11 points is Kirby. And the winner with 13 points is Matthew. And I can just hear all the listeners screaming at their MP3 players, iPhones and whatever, the answers that Kirby couldn't get because they were blimmin' easy. Anyway, that was this week.
I don't remember everything. Yeah. And the things that I remember.
This is your favorite one.
Yes.
Kirby.
I'm surprised. I would have got them.
Surprised you don't have it memorized.
Well, I'm surprised that neither Kirby nor I could remember the Count's first name for crying out loud.
It's one of the best parts of the first episode.
Yeah.
Mm. Indeed.
And now that we've said it, it's going to repeat in my brain forever.
Yes. Did anybody listen to last week's show?
Not yet.
Parts of it.
I'm about halfway through.
My iPod broke, so I'm not listening to anything right now.
What? You can listen to it on your Mac, you know.
Well, I could, but I don't like just sitting there in front of my computer listening.
Missing out. Simon Fisher-Becker was on top form.
Yes.
Was he?
Yes, he was. It was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. I've listened to it 3 times, actually, and... thoroughly enjoyed each listening. Obviously, not so much the first time, and had to edit out my inadequacies. But anybody who wants to listen to the Simon Fisher-Becker special of last week, episode 212, please do so, because it's really, really good. Even if I can blow his trumpet, because it's him, not me. It's good on that one. So we have sponsors. I can't remember who they are, Mary.
one of them is who. Dot co.uk.
Yes.
And the other one is lavarzi.com.
Yes. Or .co.uk. One of
which
them.
Which is spelled how?
Never mind. Well, Lavarzi. LOVARZI. And if you have any doubts, join the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, where you can see emblazoned across the top of the Facebook page. 10th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver. Now, did anybody see the post I put on the 20 Megabyte group? Madeline McCann, a very famous missing child from 2007. Yeah. The photo of her holding a Sonic Screwdriver. Now, what actually sprung to mind is that I do hope she returns at some point, because it does happen, doesn't it? You hear children disappearing, and then some evil man has got them locked away in a cellar, and they come out when they're grown up. So I do hope that's what's happened to her and not the more sinister things, you know.
What doctor's screwdriver is that?
Well, 2007, it would have been probably a 10th.
Yeah, well, 9 and 10 essentially had the same screwdriver, like so it could, it, you know, it didn't, the design didn't really change till Smith came in.
It
so
didn't, that's right.
It, oh, given the way thing merchandise was going, then it's probably technically a 10th.
But
so.
What got to mind is that, is because there's that picture, you could write a Doctor Who story around her disappearance, you know, and there's so many other things, like this plane that if they hadn't found wreckage for, I don't know if they have done yet or not, again, you could embroider that into some sort of Doctor Who story. There's so many things.
Somebody probably will 40, 50 years from now when Doctor Who is nearing its 100th anniversary, and that will be a story from that season, I'm sure.
Indeed. Anyway, latest products are Assault Dalek, $6.99, Doctor Who magazine, 471.
I thought they were pepper pots instead of salt.
the DWM special on the Cybermen, which is priced $9.99. 11th Doctor new version, which doesn't look that new because it hasn't got the purple coat. And the 12th Doctor regenerator, still really hacked off that they haven't brought these out in the 5 inches because these are the 3.75 inches. Characters.
Are you going to say that every week?
I'm very disappointed. Yes, I am. Until they do it. Because I've had notification from a well-known science fiction and cult TV series character providing company, very sweet, big one, that my figure, the 5-inch figure of the War Doctor, I think it's War Doctor and Eighth Doctor, you can change the head on it or something like that, it's on its way soon. So they've done it for that one, for the War Doctor, but not for the... Not for the 11th Doctor in purple outfit, or for the 12th Doctor forthcoming. Cause
I think the difference is that the 5-inch figures now are being seen more as collector's items.
Yes, that's what we want. I want to collect it, and I do want my 11th Doctor in purple coat and 12th Doctor in purple coat, because it's a tradition. They bring out these regeneration figures, and I haven't got it.
Well, whereas the difference is the 3.75-inch figures are meant to be played with. They're meant for children to play with. They're not meant for the kind of collector's market that the 5-inch figures are now being
I totally agree, but it's well overdue.
You know what I just remembered? I remembered some of those early 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast shows where Isabella was looking around for her Doctor Who figures.
No, I think what you're mistaken that for was I had all the Doctor Who figures in a bag and got her to pull them out of the bag and tell me which ones they were. That spawned the game, wasn't it? Where's the Sixth Doctor game that those chaps at what was it called again? Titanium Bunker, was it?
Yeah.
They did for us. Right, so talking of eBay, which we weren't, but I'm going to talk about it now because it's fun sometimes to just deviate down the road of eBay. The most expensive...
I'm going to have to leave pretty soon.
I know, that's why I'm just doing this.
And me too.
And we mentioned Lavazzi, but they do stuff like scarves and Doctor Who stuff, don't they? And they don't really deviate from that. So if you want a nice Fourth Doctor scarf, if you want a Sixth Doctor's jumper and a neckerchief
seventh,
thing.
Not six, yeah, seventh.
I did love winding you up about that one.
If they ever want to ship some podcast people some examples for us to wear around.
Yeah, well, they would have done that for me, wouldn't they? Go to lavazzi.co.uk or Google Lavazzi, Lovarzi, because they've got some really good and bespoke stuff. Scarves and knitted stuff there that are not Doctor Who related. Anyway, back to eBay. The most expensive item listed on eBay is a Doctor Who figure collection. It's a massive bundle, job lot, brand new in box, listed at £1,150. Now, you might be surprised to hear this, but there's been no bids on it. Got very quiet. Right, so that's the most expensive listed item with no bids on. I'm just going to go down this list. Right, the one with the bids on with the most money is £150. Doctor Who figures, not brand new in box. It's a load of them. It looks like about all 11 plus others. Rather like my collection, actually. £150, and somebody's actually gone for that. Because there's another one, probably by the same person underneath with no bids, and another one still further down. Of different characters, £150 with one bid against. So that's one and two. I don't think we're going to find anything else. But so basically, it seems to be that the most people are prepared to spend on Doctor Who characters or things on eBay at the moment is £150. But There is some interesting stuff on there. Like there's the
it's Doctor a heavy Who, expense.
Doctor Who holographic hologram for Ninth Doctor, very rare apparently, and that's listed at £399.99. But again, nobody's bid against it. So there you
I'm
go.
I'm surprised you didn't mention the original 1976 Dalek annual artwork that's currently going on eBay for $6,350.58 plus shipping.
That's probably the American one.
Mm.
Well, it says from United Kingdom,
Ooh,
so
I didn't see that.
Yeah, but the order that you see things is different depending on which where you are.
No, I've set it to order highest price first, so I don't quite understand why that's doing that. But that's quite interesting.
I set it to price plus shipping highest first.
Oh,
so.
Well, it would be with shipping, wouldn't it? Yes.
$123.71 shipping.
Anyway, right. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group with 10 minutes left before you two have to go. I'm just seeing if there's anything interesting. It was basically the comment thread that Ben might be on to talk about very soon. All I did was post a thing that said episode 211, Dalek Invasion of Earth, is out now. And all hell broke loose, didn't it? Once Thomas Cookson said, checks panel, sighs with relief that Ben Shoveler bore isn't on it, begins playing and listening. It's quite a funny comment, actually. And I just said, bit harsh. Poor old Ben, of course. Maybe if I hadn't said that, it wouldn't actually have gone down there. I don't know. I've listened to enough different podcasts with him on saying the same thing on all of them to form a fair and objective opinion of him, and I doubt I'm the only one who holds it. And you're probably right. There's quite a lot of people that disagree with Ben's. I think I can't understand or work out whether Reese is pro or anti Moffat, because I think sometimes when Ben's talking, Reese is, oh, yeah, I completely agree. And sometimes when he's talking, it's Reese's, oh, no, it's a load of rubbish. So, you know, I'm not quite sure where Reese sits on it, because he never comes on the blimmin' show. Oh, he's so busy writing his bloody excuse books, but he can't come on the show. He had an excuse today.
We were chatting with him before. Yes. Show as
right, let's see
it.
Let's look up Reese Parton's excuse for the day. Hang on, it's on here somewhere. I can find it. I'm just scrolling down for it.
His excuse was that he hadn't seen what we were reviewing and that he had a cold.
There
and
go.
He didn't
oh, God,
the cold. Anyways.
Unbelievable, isn't he? Yes. But he did actually comment on this particular comment thread, which is obviously inspired Mr. Shoveler to come on the show. But Thomas, if you're listening to this one, you can always turn off prior to the bit where Ben's on. So there's plenty of the show he's not on that you can listen to. In fact, I won't even mention it in the show notes, just in case he doesn't want to listen to the whole thing. So it's funny that when he's ranting about Ben, Ben says, I have a fan. I don't know if he's talking about me, but there you go. Yeah, bless him. Yeah, so there you go. So, lots of discussion points. And I'm wondering whether that's why people are joining the group, because of the discussion discussions and interesting facts that are being posted on it.
I'm wondering what has happened. I don't think this is it, but something has happened that we're getting so many people. We're also getting our fair number of fakes
yeah.
trying to come.
You always tell the fakes, can't you? Because it says so-and-so has changed his profile picture and it's a woman.
Yeah.
Well, I've been wondering that as well, because there's a non-Doctor Who group I run for another British sci-fi icon I won't mention for the sake of Mary's sanity. I've had a huge amount of people joining that in the last 2 or 3 weeks. Like 25 or 30 people have now joined it, and it's just kind of like, where are all these people coming from?
Yeah. And you might have noticed
noise.
That was
sorry,
Mary, but it's still carrying on, this conversation.
Yeah,
Thomas has just posted more.
One of our recent members has already put up like an advertisement that he's selling his collection of a Doctor Who stuff. So I wonder, you know, there's people like that too that are coming.
That was Archibald Dangerfield, whose real name is actually, but he just likes to use Archibald Dangerfield. He's one of my work colleagues. His boyfriend, member of the Isle of Wight Doctor Who fans Facebook group.
Well. At least he's selling Doctor Who stuff. He's not telling people to click to go get discounts on iPhones and stuff.
I will say, he posted that originally on the Isle of Wight Doctor Who fans Facebook group page. And I said, well, post it on the 20 megabyte one. So there you go. That's why. And it seems that he may have sold it to someone on the mainland anyway. So that worked quite nicely for him.
There is a really, really cool animated GIF. I know some people say GIF. It's supposed to be GIF. Yes, it's GIF
is a lemon.
that that I posted a couple of days ago on the Facebook page. Someone did a really good job of matching up the 11th Doctor and Idris running with Sixth and Perry. And yeah. They also used a really neat trick to make it look 3D by using these two vertical white bars. And it is really brilliant. Go out there, click on it, and see it. It's just, it was really well done.
Excellent. I have to look out for that.
And also the cat with the Dalek hat is not my cat, although it looks like a cat that I did have.
Okay. We've got a bit of time.
And and Fred also wanted to say that she really enjoyed City of Death.
Good.
And I did not tell her John Cleese was going to be on there. We'll rewatch Fawlty Towers all the time. And when she saw Fawlty Towers before she saw any Monty Python. Mm. So now when she sees John Cleese, she considers it faulty, considers him faulty. But
yeah.
I told her, watch, just keep an eye out on what's about to happen. And she went, faulty!
Excellent. Right. Okay, right. Now, I've got to find my thing. We are going to do news in a minute, probably after you've departed.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. I found out that the girls did not do some of their chores last night, and I've got to go and load the dishwasher real fast before I leave.
Disgraceful. Right then, do you remember the advert I posted in between segments of the show a couple of weeks ago in relation to my books? I've noticed that it's a bit out of date, so I'm now going to reel them off. And that just before you go. So that means you can buy them as well, Kirby. Okay.
I haven't bought the Troy ones.
You need to. Anyway, right.
I did buy the Doctor Who quiz book, of course.
Good, right. Well, this is what we have, right?
I wish that you would put them out in a format that I could read on my
Nexus. Some of them are. Oh, not on the Nexus. No. But anyway, right. 26th of July, 2005.
I don't like reading things on my iPod. Never mind.
Here we go. This is my plug. 26th of July, 2005 was the Diary of an Unwilling Virgin's publication date, followed by the 18th of January, 2008, the England quiz book, followed by, on 1st of May, 2008, the cricket quiz book. See, that's got Doctor Who relevance. Followed by, on the 12th of September 2008, the rugby quiz book. Followed by, and that one covers the rugby union and rugby league. 4th of December 2009, the official Leicester City quiz book. Good grief. On the 5th of March 2010, the official Southampton quiz book. That was its second publication because it was an updated version because it was originally published in 2006. That is available as a paper book and an e-book, as are all of the books I've just mentioned. The 26th of March 2010, the World Cup quiz book. I think that was my first hardback book.
Oh.
Yeah. The 22nd of January 2013, From Troy to Man, which is my first ebook only, which is the follow-up to The Diary of an Unwilling Virgin. It's a continuation, basically. I think a nine-month gap in between the two. And the 14th of August 2013, The Rolling Stones quiz book. Oh, I missed
one.
Sorry.
I forgot about that one.
Sorry.
I had to get that one.
I forgot. The 12th of February 2013, the Beatles quiz book. Then 14th of August 2013, the Rolling Stones quiz book. And, of course, all the kerfuffle that's going on now with poor old Sir Mick, would have been in it. And also found out recently that the Rolling Stones, in their very early days, performed on the Isle of Wight at Wye Ride Pavilion. And that wasn't in my reference material, so I would have loved to have included that. They have, of course, performed on the island since then at the Isle of Wight Festival. The 29th of October 2013, the Ultimate Doctor Who quiz book, which, of course, is the spin-off quiz book from that very famous quiz show, You Won't Get This One. Forthcoming, and I'm currently compiling it as we speak, and it's actually listed now on my publishing site, which is apexpublishing.co.uk, is the 100 Facts About Doctor Who book, which I'm currently compiling at the moment. So that will be the next one. So there we are. Please buy them.
Yes, and they are available on the US Amazon site. I just looked them up.
And on iTunes.
Where amusingly enough, the paperback version of Diary of an Unwilling Virgin has a publication date of December the 31st, 1969.
See, there is timey-wimeyness involved in it. In fact, if you buy if you buy From Troy to Man, that there is references in that book of Doctor Who, because obviously Doctor Who came back during the period in which that story is set. So,
and the clock says that
it's time for you to go.
It's time for us to go.
You're going to leave. Make like a leaf and get out of here.
We're recording Sunday.
Sunday.
Oh no!
And
make
as usual,
make like a tree and get out of here. I got that wrong, didn't I? Just like Biff. Yeah,
five
sorry.
And 6 hours respectively behind Adam.
Yes, indeed.
And it's going to be on the Sunmakers.
It's going to be on Sunday. I mean, on the Sunmakers.
Sunday on the Sunmakers. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, right. Thanks, everybody. And please stay with me. Please play with me, Matthew, because I'm just about to do the news.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, well, I'm going to step away for just a second, if you can wait just a moment. I need to run to the bathroom real quick.
Oh, good Lord.
Edit that out of the show. That out of the show.
Bye.
Hello there. This is Colin Baker, and you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. And doesn't make... I'll do it again.
So we begin with, you know, I mentioned last time about the Bournemouth police box thing that they're building as a sort of partly police box, partly sort of tourist attraction. They've put some pictures on the DoctorWhoNews.net page of it in construction. That's rather magnificent, actually. It says the pictures of the TARDIS-style police box bound for Bournemouth have been tweeted by the Dorset Force as the construction moves closer to its spring installation. Now, the interesting thing about that is that apparently the BBC hold the copyright for police boxes, and I'm just interested if it's a sort of joint copyright between the police and the BBC enables them to... Pardon? No?
No, actually. The BBC owns the copyright. There was actually a very big legal case.
Yeah.
Over the copyright of it, where the Metropolitan Police tried to claim copyright ownership of it. And the court decided that because of Doctor Who and its significance not only in British culture but also worldwide, that the police box was much more identifiable as a TARDIS rather than as a proper police box. And the BBC ended up with the copyright.
So I wonder how they've got away with it, because it doesn't mention anything to do with working with the BBC. I know obviously they did say they wanted it to be, you know, a tourist attraction, so obviously there is a link there. And of course the one in London outside the tube station was already there, so there's no problem with that one. So it's quite interesting.
Well, it would be it may be the equivalent as well of, you know, the people go out and as fans go out and build, you know, TARDISes. We have a couple involved with the convention here, Concus Sturberus, who went out in 3 weeks and built the TARDIS we have here. It's probably something where it's not worth the BBC's time and effort to go and police everybody who goes out and builds, you know, a TARDIS or a police box or whatever you want to call it. So,
yeah, I mean, that's probably right, but obviously that's probably the reason why they don't go and police every single podcast that's on in relation or in connection to Doctor Who. Because obviously, like, we do have a disclaimer that says about no copyright infringement intended, but I'm sure we do breach copyright from time to time unintentionally.
Yeah. Well, I know on Stories from the Vortex, we have a similar disclaimer we put up on the website.
Plug in there, Matthew.
And we recently featured an old episode of their podcast they do that focused on the sound design of one of the stories we were reviewing, and actually contacted, because it's no longer available on their site since they revamped it about a year or two ago, and actually emailed and said, can we have permission to include it on our show? And they went, yeah, go ahead, just as long as you say with permission of Big Finish. So
yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, I must admit, when I did last time, I actually got any backwards and forwards communication with Nick Briggs after I upset him, was in relation to if we ever wanted to do any, you know, Big Finish stuff. Obviously, we have done in the past, because I have Toby on talking about his first acting role in Big Finish, and I was allowed to use the trailer, but not actual parts of the things that weren't in the trailer. However,
yeah.
I think I
well,
did.
Well, I think, yeah, but that's what we tend to do is we use trailers. We don't tend to use a lot of clips. We've used clips on a couple of occasions. I think that the general rule is, as long as it's no more than maybe a minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes, if you're putting whole episodes of the story out, that's clearly in violation of it. Whereas if you're using a clip or a trailer, you're doing their job for them publicity wise and spreading the word. So I do have to ask, what did you do to Nicholas Briggs?
Ah, you'll have to listen to the show that we put out with Paul Wilson, in which I explained that.
Oh, I'll have
but
to
in brief,
up.
I I said that all current Doctor Who is professional fan fiction. But he misunderstood what I was getting at. Oh, I think he took it as an insult, but what I'm saying is that the reason why Doctor Who is so, probably the way it's so good now, is because all the people writing for it are professionals, and they're also fans of the show. That's what I was saying, but he took it another way.
Yeah, when you call it professional fan fiction, that has certain connotations attached to it.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. He misunderstood what I was getting at. Basically, it's not written by people who are not fans of the show now, whereas the classic Doctor Who was written by writers who weren't necessarily fans of the show.
Okay, so you accidentally insulted Nicholas Briggs. I did. You've argued with Andrew Cartmell about Sylvester McCoy. Is there any other Doctor Who celebrities you've insulted and felt the need to have arguments with?
Well, I don't think Andrew objected to my disagreement with him, because he came back on the show afterwards, so he just accepted that my opinion was different to him.
Yeah, well, hopefully have him on a third time come June.
Yes, indeed. But we won't be having Nicholas Briggs back on, I don't think. Unfortunately.
Well, if he comes back to Chicago, I'll try and get another interview with him, because I interviewed him for the Terrible Zoden fanzine a year and a half, 2 years ago now. Yeah. And he was great fun to interview. It was
we had a great time with him. Me and Alicia had a great time with him on the show. He thought Alicia was hilarious. But I have asked him a few times in trying to explain myself to him, so it would be nice if you did get to speak to him and explain what I was getting at, and that I didn't mean to upset him, and I do hold him in very high esteem.
Yeah, well, also keep in mind he's very busy. I mean, besides all the work he does with Big Finish and doing the voices for the TV series, he is a jobbing actor as well. So,
oh, yes.
Believe me, we try, you know. Yeah, I think it's one of the reasons he doesn't do a lot of conventions outside of the UK. Just simply doesn't have the time.
Yeah.
To do it, is, for that matter.
I forgot we were doing news. Christopher Eccleston has recorded an audio version of a short story by award-winning author Patrick Ness in aid of Read for RNIB Day. The story, Now That You've Died, takes readers and listeners on an exhilarating journey to the afterlife. It was written by Ness, especially for the Royal National Institute of Blind People, the leading UK charity helping blind and partially sighted people. The story can be heard for free here, so you click on the link and it'll take you to the free audio story. In return, listeners are asked to consider making a donation to the RNIB, which is really good. That's quite a good thing, yeah. I think. Worth pursuing, I think. And yeah. The Big Finish listener survey, Big Finish, want to know your thoughts on the audio range, and are offering a prize of £250 worth of Big Finish digital products to encourage people to take part in the big survey. There are 50 questions, and the survey will take around 10 to 15 minutes. The answers are confidential. The survey will run until the end of March, and one person will be selected at random from all returns to receive their choice of £250 worth of Big Finish digital products. Of course, if you choose the 50th anniversary deluxe super duper vinyl edition, that'll be all your money gone in one go. So
it's just for the downloads. You don't get the actual physical.
I was being facetious. There's no point in doing the final version at that point. I know. So yeah, that's a good one. I might even do that myself.
Yeah, the survey, I took it, obviously, being the Big Finish fan that I am, I took it not long after it was initially announced earlier in the month. It's not anything particularly detailed there. I think it's just a typical marketing survey. Also wanting to get people's thoughts about what are we doing right, what are they doing wrong, what are the ranges outside of Doctor Who, or even things within Doctor Who, what would you like us to explore? So, you know, if you're a listener to Big Finish, or you're somebody who's interested in Big Finish, it's a way of getting your voice heard, I think is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, we have similar surveys at work. People just sort of ask questions on how our experiences are at work and how we're enjoying everything, but we're totally confidential.
Of course, if Ben took the survey, he would just tell them that Big Finish isn't really Doctor Who and piss off.
Probably, yes, but like we say, he's entitled to his opinion. It might not necessarily be right, but he's entitled to that opinion. But there's certainly aspects of Doctor Who that he loves, otherwise he wouldn't be so passionate about it. Research the forthcoming book, The Facts About Doctor Who 1, it hasn't got its full title yet. I think it has, but I can't remember what my publisher said they were going to call it. I was looking at the the convention, the history of conventions, and discovered, and I thought this was quite interesting, that the first Doctor Who convention was held in 1977. And that was, and it eventually became Panopticon.
Yeah.
So that was quite an interesting fact I discovered.
Yeah, they talk about it on the Key to Time box that it's featured. There's a documentary where they do sort of an overview of the entire Graham Williams era. I think It's called A Matter of Time. And they do actually mention, they actually have photographs and whatnot from that first convention.
Hmm.
Which it seems like in retrospect, it's probably not so much more a convention so much more as a meetup that Tom Baker and Graham Williams happened to be at.
Yeah.
But it did, as you say, it grew into Panopticon, and the first American Who conventions, I think, followed within 2 or 3 years after that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out which American convention was the first one. So I'm going to see if I can find out. Right.
There's a page. The Wikipedia does have a page on the American Doctor Who fandom that I think mentions it. Though the big conventions that we know today, Gallifrey 1, for example, which is worth mentioning because tickets went on sale Friday afternoon for that, for next year's, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Central Time. And by 2:15, the tickets had sold out, all 3,200 of them.
Yeah.
So something on the average of about 42 to 43 tickets a minute, which is rather extraordinary.
Yeah.
And Chicago, I think, started in 83, I think, and they had have continued since then. And the latest iteration, Chicago TARDIS, which Mary and myself and Dr. Phil go to, started in, I believe, 2000 and has continued since then.
Well, I do, in fact, in front of me, and I don't know whether I should trust a wiki type of website, because they're not always accurate, even if they're run by people who know, you know, the actual subject matter. But GallifreyBase.com has a list of US conventions in the United States, and it begins in spring 1979, which is more or less what you said, in Los Angeles, California, and at the LA Marriott, which has to be Gallifrey 1, doesn't it? Because that's where Gallifrey's...
Yeah, well, I think that I don't know for certain about LA. I know what happened with Chicago is that the convention started out as one thing, morphed into Visions, and then Visions eventually morphed into what is now Chicago TARDIS. Mm. So I'd imagine there were probably a series of conventions in LA that eventually morphed into the first proper Gallifrey one in 88 or 89. And then they've continued for 25, going on 26 years since then.
Well, it does say that 1979 one was called the Los Angeles Science Fiction, Horror and Fantasy Convention, whereas in March 1980, the same convention was called Who Won, and in brackets, Gallifreyan Irregulars, whereas the previous one in 79 was just called Gallifreyan Irregulars. Panopticon West, which is obviously the one in UK, is called Panopticon. So the Panopticon West in America was held in Tulsa in 1981. And the one you said, you mentioned Chicago.
Yeah.
I just had, there we are. 1982, Chicago, Illinois, America Congress. That's where it was held. And it was called Panopticon West 2. So obviously the Panopticon West 1 was held in Oklahoma. So, so obviously that's probably what you're referring to in relation to something that evolved into Chicago TARDIS.
The first, I think the really big one that got a lot of attention, I think, in Chicago was the 1983 one that happened on the anniversary weekend, which became a source of animosity, as I understand it, between British and American fandom, because DWAS, the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, was trying to hold an event to mark the show's 20th anniversary that weekend and could not get anybody to attend because everybody they were trying to get were getting on planes and flying to the U.S., so they had to actually move their schedule about for their event.
Yeah. This list only goes up to 2000, unfortunately. When did your one start?
Conquistador started in 2012, and I actually came to it quite late in the day, believe it or not. I'm not quite sure. I wasn't one of the founding members, let me put it that way, of it. That would have been Bonnie and Laurie and Judson, who started it. And Bonnie had run a anime convention with her daughter here in Huntsville for several years. And her daughter was wanting to sort of move on other things, and they were wrapping it up and were looking at things to potentially do. And the story goes that Judson, who dresses up as the 10th Doctor, walked into the room and they went, "How about a Doctor Who convention?" Had no idea if anybody was actually going to attend. And it's really grown, I think, in the last, you know, two going on 3 years. If you had told me in 2012 when I became involved, simply because I was the guy with the Classic Series DVDs who was willing to sit in a room for 4 or 5 hours and let people watch them.
Yeah.
And, you know, keep an eye on it, that, you know, we would have 1,000 people attending the next year and potentially more than that attending, and that we'd have Sylvester McCoy and Andrew Cartmell and Gareth David Lloyd attending our convention, I'd have probably laughed in your face, which makes it even more extraordinary that it actually happened.
Yes, I'm looking at the Concasturbarus page at the moment, which is concasturbarus.com, and the history page, actually. There you are. It's a nice picture of you. I'm sure you haven't used that as a profile picture at some point.
I have. I don't tend to use it very much because it's me in costume. So, you know, and when you want people to, you know, particularly as a budding young writer, when you're wanting people to look at you, the first thing you don't want them to do is to look at you in a costume from a 25-year-old British science fiction series and sit there and go, who the hell is that?
Well, it doesn't seem to. Whenever you see pictures of me, I'm always wearing something silly, so I wouldn't worry too much about that. So
well, that's the difference between youth and experience, perhaps. You know better, and I don't.
I was almost going to say. I mean, I was out filming a wedding the other week, and I was using our uniform that we use, which is basically a hoodie and a polo shirt. Unfortunately, I didn't tuck my polo shirt in, so on the video, my wife shot the video. You can see my shirt hanging out the back. It just looks so scruffy. So I now know in future to actually tuck it in before going out filming. And also talking about trying to set up conventions and doctor events, which I'd love to do, but the amount of work and money involved in the initial setup, which I haven't got, would be so difficult. Because obviously, not obviously, but when talking to Simon Fisher-Becker after the recording last time, or last week, I should say, because we talked about him coming to the Isle of Wight to perhaps do a performance, and he was quite interested in that. He was saying, "Oh, where would I, you know, where could I do it?" And I sort of gave him a few sort of pointers. So he seemed like, "Well, this will happen," he said. "This will happen somehow." But yeah. I thought, well, wouldn't that be good if he set a date to come over and perform somewhere, that we could get a couple more Doctor Who people in and turn it into a Doctor Who event? But again, that would be so difficult.
Yeah, I will say, if it makes you feel any better, I will say I imagine that getting people to, you know, guests, is the word I'm looking for, to attend, will probably be a whole lot easier for you than it will be for us.
Oh, yeah, I don't deny it. But obviously they need paying, and, you know, that money's got to come from somewhere. I don't expect they want to be paid after the event. It's usually probably beforehand, and you can't be guaranteed of, you know, always getting the money in.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose Concasturbarus, we had the luck that Bonnie had helped run a convention before and knew the kind of ins and outs of things, enough that unlike a lot of startup conventions, that's one of the reasons why, you know, if you look at a lot of conventions, there's particularly startups, they do 1 year and that's it, because they go all out, they overspend, and, you know, everybody's broke at the end of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure I don't really know exactly what to suggest in that regard, because I wasn't involved with the initial setup, so I can't offer you any advice. You know, if there's an organized fan group on the island, I would say talk to them and see if anybody's interested.
There is, but it's not organized. It's there's loads of fans. I found a couple at the Carnival Queen inauguration. One of them became one of the princesses on the float for this year, and as they were waiting to go upstairs to the judges, they were just suddenly piped up going, "Oh, we're massive Doctor Who fans, da 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 da," and Alicia was there saying, "Oh, my dad, look, they're Doctor Who fans." I said, and I was sort of slightly embarrassed, and said, "Oh, that's brilliant, that's a good thing to be." And then there was a girl that was there talking about going to college and studying media studies and desperate to get into radio, and I thought, "My God, I do an internet radio show." I kept myself quiet. But I did send a message, because a girl, Maya, who piped up about being a Doctor Who fan, and it's her and her friend. Her friend is the Carnival Queen, and her aunt is an old friend of mine. So I sent a message to her aunt saying, "I'll, you know, point them in the direction of the Isle of Wight Doctor Who fans Facebook group." And she said, "Oh, my husband's a massive Doctor Who fan. I point him in the direction of it as well." So they're all in there somewhere, hiding away. But whether they'd actually come out and be active, I don't know.
I think my rule of thumb, particularly with the way Conquistadors was started and the way it was grown, is if it's reasonably priced and you aren't forcing people to spend a small fortune, people tend to be a lot more willing to come out, or if you bring somebody fairly major. A lot of it is agents and actors. Some of them are willing to put off payment till after the event, because that's generally the way conventions work, that they make all their money during the convention. There's not a whole lot of money up front.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Unless you get like something like L.A. or Chicago, where, or even us gradually growing to, you can convince people to pre-register for the event, to buy their tickets in advance, and that can give you the money to get people. A lot of it depends on who you're trying to get. I would imagine, for example, based on our experience, that if you're trying to get Matt Smith, for example, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg and other bodily organs.
Yeah, probably.
To bring him.
Yeah. But obviously, if you're doing a Doctor Who event, you'd probably want to mix it up a bit, have some classic, some new, because obviously you want to attract the younger fans like Maya, who probably isn't going to be interested in the classic series as much as the new series, because obviously the new series now is, you know, getting towards 100 episodes. It's a sort of phenomenon in itself. So
yeah.
Although it is linked, it's very much a separate thing, and it's got a separate fan base to a certain degree, which is, whereas us older people were like both, the younger people were more likely, like Reese, just attach themselves to the new series. They're interested in the old series because there's a, you know, it's like a progression thing, but they're very much devoted to the new series. And you'd have to have people from the new series to attract them people.
I don't know if maybe that's the difference between American fandom and the British fandom. A lot of what I've found here in the American fandom is you do tend to have people who know the new series very well, or people who are big fans of the new series, who latch on to the old series. It may be a doctor or an actor they don't necessarily know, but it's somebody from the show. And people tend to get excited about that. And I mean, if people were already excited about Sylvester, they were even more, were just as excited about having Gareth David Lloyd coming, for example. Even if I'm not a big Torchwood fan whatsoever, but, you know, I've only met the man once. It'd be great to meet him again. And I'm same thing with John Barrowman. If I ever got the opportunity to meet him, you know, I'm not a huge Torchwood fan, but it's somebody who's been in Doctor Who, somebody who has a Who connection.
Yeah.
So I think you would be surprised, I think.
I'm thinking that we'd have a fairly good chance of getting Simon Fisher-Becker simply because of the idea that if Simon himself organised a performance or a visit to the island to do his performance, it just makes sense to me if it was all right with him, or could we try and get a few more Doctor Who people in and turn it into a more of a fan event? And I think that would be good for him because it's more likely to generate an audience for him. Yeah, it's basically sowing a seed, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've done that, I think, with Toby Haydock's two shows, that he will perform them at the end of the event or whatever, but they'll build the event
up to it,
around the fact he's doing the performance. So that's not a bad idea at all, and it's a particularly good model, I think, particularly with the way UK conventions seem to be going. I say that as somebody thousands of miles away looking across the internet.
Mm. I think that might be worth trying. It depends, obviously, how Simon gets on in his, because it won't be, I would have thought, in his current tour run because it's too close. But maybe, I mean, if he does another, it might be a one-off thing. I know Toby does one-offs of some of his shows, not necessarily Moss Ate My Doctor Who Scarf, but which I still haven't seen. I've heard it. I've got the audio of it, but I haven't actually seen the show. Although he did say there might be a video of it coming out, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, well, it hasn't come out. I was lucky enough he performed it in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I got to see it on stage, and it was wonderful. And, of course, I've heard the audio version.
Yeah.
I'd love for there to be a video version of it. I think that there's a feeling at the moment maybe there's not really a market for it. There's not really anybody like back during the Wilderness Years, Real Time or BBV, for example, who would have done that kind of thing, aren't really in business anymore. There's not a huge amount of demand.
Yeah.
For that kind of a thing. That said, Moths did very well on broadcast. It's done very well on CD.
Yeah.
So,
and on download. I think I downloaded it, actually, from iTunes.
Yeah, it's very cheap. Big Finish did sell some of the BBC Audio Ghost stuff, so yeah. That's a pop that you may have gotten it from them. I know it's on iTunes here for less than $5. Yeah. I always encourage people to go buy it
because it's
an absolute bargain.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Obviously, got the cameos from various Doctor Who actors in it as well. So that's, you know, if you haven't heard it, listeners, listen to it. Moth Ate My Doctor Who Scarf by Toby Haydock. It's an essential fans listen.
Yes.
But yes, exciting things to come on the Isle of Wight in relation to Doctor Who, but not fixed yet. So it's like the fact that we haven't got hardly any listeners on our local band, you know, a band of people around the Isle of Wight, which has 100,000 residents and a few hundred Doctor Who fans unaware of the 20 Megabyte podcast, despite me trying to get hold of the Isle of Wight County Press and Isle of Wight Radio to promote it.
I share that experience because we've done Conquisturbis for 2 years. North Alabama is not that big of a place. Mm-hmm. We've been mentioned on websites. Conquisturbis.com in particular has mentioned us. Doctor Who Archive, later Doctor Who Worldwide, which appears to have gone down permanently, which is a shame, mentioned us as well. They have thousands of views every day. We've put flyers up in various places. We've done everything short of buying a billboard simply because I think that might be a bit outside of our budget. But we always run into people who have no idea that the convention exists, and that was part of the reason we did the St. Patrick's Day parade a couple of weeks ago. And stunned by the amount of people in the parade itself who, as you know, we were lining up, were coming up to us and would see the big blue box and all of us dressed up in costume and be going, "Oh my God, Doctor Who! Can we have a picture?" Yes.
Yeah.
Click. Do you know about the convention? There's a convention?
I think the other thing about the possibility of having it on the island, obviously with having Who One local, I'm pretty, well, fairly confident that if something happened that they'd probably want to get involved in it. As a podcast would be involved in it. My business, APV Services, could be involved in it somewhere along the line. So, not, you know, in regards to investing money in it, but just investing interest in it, and that's where it just needs that little seed, and that seed would be Simon Fisher-Becker.
Yeah, actually, I think, you know, Chicago's model is that it's kind of organized by Alien Entertainment, which runs DoctorWhoStore.com. here, and they organize the convention. They're the main dealer at it, so it might not be a bad idea just to go talk to whoever you know at Who Won and see if they're interested.
Certainly, that would be an avenue for a merchandise sale, and that would be ideal. Yep. Obviously, if you're going to have something like that, you'd want even if it's not the BBC shop like it was at the Doctor Who Celebration or Forbidden Planet for that matter that were up there as well.
Well, maybe something else as well. Maybe you could get Who Won to maybe sponsor a couple of people. Maybe, you know, because you have contacts, you have people you've interviewed.
Yeah.
See if they would potentially be interested in coming down to the Isle of Wight for a day and, you know, offer an appearance fee and so forth.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing, though. As long as if they're prepared to be paid afterwards, the only problem then is always a gamble, and I can't afford to gamble anything. There's always a gamble that you won't get the money back to pay them. Unless you have a thing that, well, could you go, we'll pay you if we, you know, that's a certain fee depending on how many people turn up to it, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, that was part of the reason why I suggested, you know, possibly getting Who Won involved, you know.
Yeah, well, as a fallback. I don't think they'd have the money to
Not necessarily as a fallback, but it does kind of, for lack of a better term, it does spread the risk out. Also because they'll be there selling merchandise, and if you advertise, you can get people to come to it.
Yeah.
You increase your chances. My advice would be to do something similar to what we did. Start out small.
Yeah.
Don't bring, you know, everybody you can get.
Well, I would obviously, being an Isle of Wight event, to attract initially Isle of Wight fans, but you'd want fans from the country and possibly around the world to come to it. Which obviously is the benefit of the podcast.
My advice would be start out small and work your way bigger and bigger.
Yeah. So it's something I'd like to do. So I'll see how I get on. It's all going to be all down to Simon Fisher-Becker, who probably doesn't know that a possible Doctor Who event sort of sits possibly on his broad shoulders. So I'll see how that happens. Yes. Well, the next thing.
Mary and I did meet him in Chicago. He is a very lovely and amiable, talkative guy. I'm sure you know from having interviewed him.
And you'll find out when you listen to it, and it's very good. Of course, Robert was on that show, and if that's Robert's last regular appearance on the 20 Megabyte podcast, it's a pretty good one to go out on.
Yeah.
But next up, it's Mr. Ben Shoveler.
The past is another country. 1987 is just the Isle of Wight.
Hello, Ben.
Hello, Ed.
Oh, what's the matter? Oh, you're very quiet. Hang on.
I've just restored my computer, so everything's a little bit funny still. Hold on.
I can hear you now.
Let me go to my settings and change things. Hold on. I was being all sad, wasn't I?
Yeah.
I'm all sad, Adam.
Yeah, you sounded pretty sad, to be honest with you. Not in a positive way, either.
No, because someone's being nasty to me on Facebook.
Is somebody being mean to you, are they?
Oh, yeah, and it's devastated my life.
And, I thought that might be the case. We have actually been discussing this particular comment thread, which I began on a completely different subject, but we were trying to sort of go more down the road of people who are entitled to their opinions, you being one of them, of course, and Thomas, is the other chap, also been entitled to his. It's just trying to avoid going down the blatant insult route.
Well, exactly, and that's why if you read my latest post on your Facebook 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast thingy, then I think you'll probably see that I replied quite politely without using the F word, which I could have done many times, because to be honest with you, I've come across people like this in my life many times, and the best way to deal with them is just to ignore them. But, you know, when people start getting a little bit personal, it's hard to be, you know. If he doesn't like my views, I don't give a monkeys, quite frankly. If he wants me to change my views so I'm like him, well, God, no. I'd rather be like me than like him by the sounds of it. But to say that, you know, some of the things he was getting a little bit personal about. And anyway, the other big thing is,
yes.
I was here first.
Yeah. Well, I hope you noticed I was trying to jump to your defence.
Yes. And, yeah, you and Mary, I appreciate that. And, you know, Reese as well. I mean, Reese is quite entitled to say what he likes about me because he knows me better than this Matthew bloke. But don't start saying, oh, I've never, he's as funny as this or that. I mean, the bloke doesn't know me, quite frankly, and to sit there and come out and say stuff. So anyway, hi, Thomas. Hope you enjoy this bit of the podcast. This bit's especially for you. And I'm going to be on every week now for every minute, just so you can't listen anymore.
Ben, you are, I'm Ben.
Anyway,
Matthew's back.
How is everybody?
Hello.
Hello, Matthew. How are you?
I'm all right. If I may quickly jump in, I would like to say, in means of full disclosure, Tom is a friend of mine. He started listening to the show because he is friends with me.
Yeah.
I will say, as I did say on Facebook, he was very undiplomatic about it. I do broadly agree, however, with what he and both Reese said. I did find, and you are entitled to your opinions. I want to say that up front. You are entitled to your opinions as much as I disagree with them. As you may recall from when we reviewed Time of the Doctor on here, and me and you disagreed on several points.
Yeah, but we did it politely, though.
Yeah, I think that's the point. I didn't feel that Thomas was being particularly polite. And you're always polite, Matthew. You always, you know, you do obviously disagree with, and I've been involved in you and Ben's disagreements. And I hear, I know, always know when you disagree with them because you go, oh, like that. But it's all it is a difference of opinion. There's no, you're an honest, you know, upfront man, but you're polite with it. And I've sometimes Ben can be a bit abrupt, but there's no insult intended with him.
So carry on, Matthew.
I think that some of your moments of hyperbole, I think, have been some of the causes of issues. I think, for example, telling people to go out and punch Stephen Moffat in the face over lying and publicity stunts.
I think that.
But to be fair, Matthew, I mean, a lot of the things I do say are in jest.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
irony.
Chances of anyone who listens to this podcast actually being lucky enough to meet Stephen Moffat and be able to punch him in the face at the same time are quite slim.
It's funny you should say that, Ben.
Did you meet Stephen Moffat and punch him
in
the face?
No, it's just, listen. Wrong. You just reminded me of something. Ben, Dave Simon, who is an associate of mine from the Who shop in Blackpool, whose hobby is going around and meeting celebrities and having his picture taken with them. He's got a vast array of pictures of him with celebrities, including Doctor Who, because he's a big Doctor Who fan. And there was a picture that he posted of himself with Stephen Moffat, in which he was trying to have his picture taken with Moffat doing the wanker sign, and Moffat kept on looking down to where his hand was. So there's pictures of his hand starting to make a shape, but in the picture itself doesn't actually make the shape. So obviously Dave is, I would guess, in the same sort of camp as you are, but he would have obviously had the opportunity to, and sounds to me like he probably would have done so. Yeah, I mean, some people do feel strong enough to say that, but I don't think anybody would actually do it. It's all irony at the end of the day.
Of course it is. If I met Stephen Moffat, I wouldn't punch him in the face. I'd discuss Doctor Who with him and why he's done certain things to it.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Well, that brings me to another point as well. I mean, it's very clear. You are not a fan of the Moffat era whatsoever. Me and you do disagree on that point. And you've made that point very clear. I think my frustration, to perhaps to a certain extent with Tom as well, I've never actually heard you articulate. Maybe it's because it was from before a time when I was listening to the podcast when you were still on. I've never actually heard you articulate what it is about Moffat's writing, what it is about the Moffat era in particular you don't like. Led to you having such strong feelings on the man and his writing, I should say.
Okay, well, I'll be very brief in my response to that. I don't like Moffat as much as I like RTD simply because I don't like the style of Moffat's writing because of the massive plot holes that he leaves in it. It seems to me that these story arcs that he starts making up in Series 5 and resolves in Series 7, he hasn't thought about how to end them when he starts writing them. Yeah. Now, that may well have been the case with previous writers on this show and other shows. It's just that, to me, over the last three series, although some of the stories have been good, I have said that, I just feel the general quality of Doctor Who over the last three series isn't as high as the first four. And that's down to the writing. I've got nothing against Matt Smith as the Doctor. He was a pretty good Doctor. He wasn't my favourite. He's other people's favourites. That's fine. I thought David Tennant was the best Doctor because of the way he portrayed the character. Now, people can disagree with me all they want there, and I don't mind about that. But, you know, as I say, I don't feel Moffat has done the show justice. He comes out and he talks, he gives it all the big talk, you know, he gives it the big lobster, the big I am, the big, yeah, this show's great. And for me, it's failed to deliver. It's very similar, and I think only Adam will be able to relate to this, you know, other sporting terms maybe. But at the moment, my football club, Man United, change manager, as you may or may not know, Matthew, I don't know, Alex Ferguson, after being in charge for 26 years, left. And
I did catch word of this, yes.
Yeah. Sorry for, you know, assuming ignorance, but obviously it's soccer and you may not know too much about the English Premier League. I don't know.
I follow bits and pieces where my UK friends mention it. I'll put it that way. I'm not a fan of anybody, but that helps.
This season, United have been terrible under their new manager.
With the same players.
Yeah, with exactly the same players, plus two £35 million players added to the squad, or the roster. There you go, Matthew. There's an American term for you for sport.
Yes.
And we've been terrible. Now, I lay that blame solely at the door of the manager and the way he's trying to get the players to play and train. And it's the same kind of thing with Doctor Who. I don't think the writing has been as good as it was before. Now, when you're a fan of something, I think you're allowed to express an opinion. Now, with Man United at the moment, I'm sitting there and I'm saying, it's rubbish. This is rubbish. We're not playing well. Doesn't mean I don't support the team and love them to death, because I do. But I want them to do well. I want them to be better. I want them to be as good as they were before. And that's the same as I feel about Doctor Who and Stephen Moffat's era in it. It is not as good as it was before. Therefore, it can be better.
Yeah.
And yes, I do express that opinion quite readily and quite forcefully and quite often. But, as I've tried to point out on the Facebook things, why should I change my opinion of what I think because other people don't agree with me?
Yeah.
I'm allowed my opinion, as you are yours, as Adam is his, as Thomas is his.
Yeah.
But I'm not coming out and, you know, well, being quite impolite, as Thomas has been in some parts of his writings. He's written something else, I haven't managed to read it yet. But, you know, and I just think, you know, you can go over the top. As I say, a lot of the things I say are in jest. And the other thing is, a lot of the things I say to get a reaction out of the other four or five people who are recording the podcast. Otherwise, we'd all have exactly the same views and it would be rather dull.
I agree.
Yeah.
No offence to anyone else on it, you know, but, you know.
I beg your pardon.
If we had the same opinions, we would just be going round in circles, licking Stephen Moffat's bum, going, oh, isn't it brilliant? Well, no, I don't think it is brilliant. And I'm sorry if I have to say that many times to get it, but as many times as I've said it's not brilliant, people have said it is brilliant. And I think someone has to give a polarized opinion to that. And I say, if it comes out boring, well, I'm sorry. That's just because that's my view and it's not going to change. Well, so, you know, but I hope that kind of clears up to you, for you, Matthew, why I'm not such a big fan of Moffat. I still love Doctor Who. I think it's a great show. Some of the things you've done have been all right, but it's not as good, in my opinion, as it was. And so, therefore, I am allowed to say so.
But yeah, to interject here, though, I mean, I seem to remember when you came on for the anniversary episodes that you actually, even though they were written by Moffat, you said you accepted that they were quite good. So, I mean, you haven't always said every single thing Moffat writes is rubbish. You still stick by your, you know, it could be better. And I seem to remember when we've reviewed RTD stories in the past that there's been some pretty poor stories of that era at this, but you still feel that those were better on average than the stories of the Moffat era.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I don't think, knowing Tom, having chatted with him on Facebook on numerous occasions, I don't think he's wanting you to change your opinions. I think his frustration is, and I will say this, I did have a similar feeling to him in this regard. Around the time of the 50th anniversary, when you were on with Adam by yourself for 4, 5, 6 episodes in a row, it seemed, you did express the exact same opinions on the exact same topics over and over and over again, which I did, you know, it did get repetitive after a while. Not it aimed as a criticism at either one of you necessarily.
Well, that would be, you could say the same though, if say Ben isn't on and we all like watched today, The City of Death, and all absolutely loved it. So again, we've all expressed exactly, apart from Mary was sort of slightly more into the middle of the thing. She wasn't as sort of raving about it as we were, but it's a similar sort of thing as that.
Yeah, well, that was the case of there were 3 or 4 of us on the show and it was being debated, whereas I think when it's just you and Ben, and no offense to either one of you in case I do cause offense, I think, Ben, you're able a lot more freely to express those opinions. Adam lets you do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you do that 3, 4, 5, 6 episodes in a row, it does become a bit of a frustrating experience after a while, if you see what I mean. For example, if I express the exact same opinions on the exact same topics in that same amount of time, in the same amount of order, week in, week out, not discussing anything else.
Yeah.
You know, you might, for example, come to that same opinion.
No, I completely agree and see where you're coming from. I absolutely take on board what you're saying as well, Matthew. But as I say, I mean, if your view doesn't change about something,
yes.
I mean, it's like anything to do with politics, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anything to do with politics, you will always get the Democrats or the Conservatives or the Labours or the Liberals, whichever, you know, country or political system you're in, they will always bang on about the same things.
Yeah.
Do people say politics is boring because of that? But do people say the politicians are boring because they stick to what they believe?
I'm afraid I would find politics boring, not necessarily, you know...
I don't mean in that respect.
No, I know what you're saying, but I personally...
Because of what they're saying. No, not because of what they're saying. They won't change their opinions on certain issues. Does that make them boring, or does that make them, well, admirable for sticking to what they believe?
Well, I think after a while it becomes more like rhetoric than attempting to have a discussion or a debate about a topic. And I will say that when I'm on the show with you, I find you a lot easier to listen to. I find you a lot easier to deal with. No offense.
No, I'm not taken there.
Because I can engage with you, I can debate with you, I can put my own feelings across. You know, we can debate a topic as we're doing now. Everybody's being reasonably polite to one another. Nobody's insulted each other. We're not swearing at each other yet.
Wait for in a minute when I get involved.
Yeah, give it 7 minutes, Matthew.
You know, that's it. I think it's some of those moments of hyperbole, the offhandedly dismissing 15 years worth of Big Finish audios. Not because they're not your cup of tea, which is a completely reasonable opinion. But then I think you turned around and then said, quote, they're not real Doctor Who and there's no point to them.
Which, yeah, but Matthew, what reaction did that invoke from people?
Well, it led to me posting a very lengthy reply on that episode, on the Facebook post with that episode, to which you never replied to, which is why I was a bit surprised that you responded to Thomas, because I tried on 2 or 3 occasions, that occasion in particular, the telling people to punch Moffat in the face over certain issues that I think RTD was just as guilty of as well, over publicity stunts in particular and lying about things. And I never could get a response out of you whatsoever.
I'll tell you what. I'll have a look back through the Facebook page and see if I can find that and post a response for you. Sorry, I didn't deliberately ignore you. The other thing is, if that's been in the last 5 weeks, my computer has been well.
That was back before Christmas. That was about 3 months ago now. Okay, 2, 3 months ago now. So
I'll have a look back and see and give you a reply to that. It can just be a little personal one between me and you.
Yeah. I will say, having chatted with Tom, and I hope Tom, if he is listening, does not mind me bringing this up, I do get the feeling that there is some pent-up frustrations here as somebody who's been listening to us for 5 or 6 months now, and things kind of just maybe came to a head and it's all kind of exploded at once. Because, you know, as Adam said when we were recording with everybody earlier, it has sparked a bit of a discussion where everybody has been expressing opinions.
What other tack do you want me to go on? I don't like Moffat. I hate Moffat. Moffat stinks. Is that
no? No. I think we're moving more down other subjects, like for instance the Big Finish line.
Audio. Look, right. Okay. A lot of the stuff I said about the Big Finish audio, I said to get reaction out of the five people who we were recording with at the time.
Yes.
Actually, okay. It was just you and Adam recording. I mean, that I think this comes back to the point I was making, is that a lot of the times you have said stuff like that, it's just been you and Adam. There hasn't been anybody else there to respond to it.
Well, there's people who listen, though, aren't there? So it might be me and Adam talking, but in the, you know,
I know what you're saying.
However many people listen, and so therefore, to create a response is, you know, as I said, as I've pointed out, and as you may know, and as other people may know, I've been broadcasting a long time. That doesn't make me better than anybody else. That doesn't mean I can express my opinions more forcefully than anybody else. But what it does mean is that I know how to play people a little bit. Yeah. I know how to get reactions.
I can come up with an example, actually. Like, for instance, on your radio show, when you did that thing where you did that, what was it, like, phoning up someone who is cheating on someone. Do you remember that little gag?
Oh, yeah. That was well funny.
Yeah. Please explain, Ben, because I can't remember exactly how it worked, but I remember it being hilarious. One of your late night radio shows.
Oh, that was, we did a little feature, where we basically caught people out for cheating on other people and phoned them both up and, you know, tried to find out what was going on and get the person lying lots and stuff. And it was to create reactions.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, if people want me to come on here, well, by the sounds of it, not many people do anymore, but the people that still do. See, I'm laughing about it. I'm not sitting here massively bothered about it. But I don't like the personal things. The bloke doesn't know me. He shouldn't be saying some of the things he's saying.
Yeah.
But
to start, well, on Matthew's point, obviously, when you said about you got to get the reaction by your comments about Big Finish and stuff like that, I think the point he's trying to make is the fact that there wasn't a comeback from it. Obviously, that might have stirred up a reaction, but there wasn't a subsequent sort of reaction back from you. Obviously, people would have defended the Big Finish audios. Being one of them, I don't listen to them religiously, but I do accept them as being certainly Doctor Who, simply because they're produced by Doctor Who people.
Matthew, you say, and then I'll give my response.
Yeah, well, it was like you were provoking a response. I gave a response, and I never got a reply from you. So you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You may be trying to provoke a response, but if you're not willing to engage further, it does get a bit frustrating.
No, absolutely. No, I can see your point, and I apologize for not, you know, starting conversations and not continuing them, therefore.
Yeah. I mean, that's we've all poor got of me. Yeah. We've all got lives. I mean, I know you've got, I know you've got a daughter and I know you have a wife and, you know, I have a job. We've all got jobs. We all have lives outside of it. And clearly this isn't the most important thing in our lives. If it was, God help us, and we need better priorities. But I think as you say, you know, you start a conversation, but you don't pick the conversation up,
Matthew,
which can
completely
be
fair.
Very frustrating.
That's completely fair. Absolutely fair. I've got no comeback to try and defend myself on that. Because that's very true. If I say something, to provoke a response, you give a response and I don't respond back, what's the point of me giving the response, provoking a response by saying something to start with?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the only reason I can give for that is because I am quite lazy sometimes and can't be asked to type and read things.
That's true.
it is absolutely true. That's what it comes down to. As for the Big Finish audio, look, if people want to listen to them, people think they're canon, that's great. I mean, I've never got into them. I don't have time to get into them. If I've said flippant things in the past, which people may not have taken as flippant things about degrading them and saying that they're rubbish or what, I'm not canon. Yeah, fair enough. I haven't got time for them. In my world, I don't want them as part of Doctor Who. If you want them as part of Doctor Who, then that's brilliant. Enjoy
them. I do a whole podcast about Big Finish, so obviously I would like them to be.
Yeah, so therefore you're quite big on them. but, you know, I'm not. And all right, my views sometimes on you know, they're brash, they're a little bit explosive sometimes, and yeah, and if I don't then follow up what I've started, then how can you have a conversation with it? Yeah,
yeah, it felt
completely
like
agree with you there, Matthew. Yeah. Completely.
Well, as I said, it felt like you just offhandedly dismissed them. You didn't come across as being in jest. You came across as being very serious, and if I may be forgiven for saying so, you came across as just a little bit arrogant. I remember that was my
not a little bit arrogant, Matthew. I'm a lot arrogant.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, I have to go.
So you don't need to be forgiven for thinking that.
I will say though, Ben. I mean, I did personally found that a little bit frustrating because I know you wouldn't, because I know what you like, but I would have just liked you to have just sort of taken time, and I know you haven't got any, or you didn't have any at the time because you obviously were working on that, just to sort of delve into one big finished story, just to sort of get one sort of, you know, idea of it. Because you may not have liked it, but say one really good big finished story that was recommended to you and that you would listen to it, and just sort of get, so you have a proper opinion on it. Obviously,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
I take your point on board, Adam, but to me, it's kind of like a TV program that my wife watches, which is called One Born Every Minute.
Oh, it's a brilliant program.
It's not brilliant, by any means, in my opinion.
Right, yeah.
No, she watches it every, oh, it's great, this, you should watch this, get into this, oh, it's about babies, all people having babies. I don't care. I'm not bothered. And you know,
I accept that. I accept that. That's why I said you, that's why I said you'd never do it, but I would, that's what I would have liked.
I can't be bothered. I don't have time.
I thought you might not be able to somewhere along the line. Are you surprised of this, Matthew?
A little bit, but, you know, I am surprised that Ben is being, from the way he has come across in previous podcast episodes, being very amiable about this and being willing to actually sit down and talk about it, which I have to admit was more than a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, you thought you were heading for a scrap.
I'll say anything with anybody, anytime, if I have the time to, and if they have the time to, and if not, then my arrogance does shine through quite brilliantly.
Yes, it does. So I have to agree with that, yes.
Yeah, but, you know, as I say, I mean, opinions are opinions, and, you know, at the end of the day, we're all friends here.
Yeah.
We all discuss things. Everyone who listens to this should, you know, if you've listened from the start, you know, because I've been, how long have I been doing this for, Adam? You know, I started on episode 30 or 40 or something.
Very, very early, yes. Very early.
You know, and so therefore I do appreciate the fact that people who have joined in the last 6 months, year and a half, I mean, I've had spells off from the show when I haven't done anything and all that kind of stuff as well. So unless you kind of know the background of me and how I think and how I talk, which I did express on the early ones, I think.
Yeah.
Then to hear me just come on and say, this is rubbish and I'm right, I agree, it can be a little bit frustrating.
I must admit, though, I say that as well. But obviously, maybe I make it more blatantly obvious I'm being tongue-in-cheek. I don't know.
Yeah.
You agree that I'm right? See, thank
you. No!
Well, that was actually, Ben, it's funny you say that. That was exactly the first time me and you did a show together was Rings of Akatan, which you were very negative about. I was a bit more positive about it. I have a very mixed opinion of that story. But I remember at the time listening to you, and actually, and this is not necessarily your fault, it's mine. It was only my second episode. I was very nervous, was trying to please everybody. I ended up, because I had to follow you, being quite a bit more negative about that story than I would have been otherwise. Because it was sort of, you know, this is the guy who's been brought back on the show. He's got a particular opinion. He seems to be towing the party line.
Right.
It's funny you should say about Rings of Akatan, though, Matty. I listen to, as you probably know, I do mention it, one of my favourite podcasts is the Bigger on the Inside podcast, which I've been listening to since before we've even done this show. It's been going since day one, because obviously they've covered every single Doctor Who story, and they're just coming to the end of the run, for obvious reasons. And very recently, they did Rings of Akatan. And they're two American guys from Chicago, and they slated it. And that when obviously the comments were going on this particular comment thread in relation to Ben's views of Rings of Akatan, did sort of ring fairly true. So obviously, like I said, it's an opinion thing. I personally don't like Rings of Akatan that much. It's got some charming elements to it, but there's certain, you know, it doesn't sort of sit in the stories I'd really like to dig out and watch side of things. But it's just interesting because they could have been two American Bens sat there. They were slating it left, right and centre.
Yeah, well, that's a case. I think Rings of Akatan is a very case in point. It was a very Marmite episode. People either loved it or they hated it.
Mm.
There's not a whole lot of ground in between, you know, present myself excluded, because, as I said, I have mixed feelings about it. I see some of Ben's points. I see a lot of Tom's points. Tom did a huge article basically in response to our episode for the Whotopia fanzine. issue 27 for anybody who's interested in reading it, if either one of you want to take the time to track
nice
it
plug,
down.
Nice plug.
But, you know, and that was a very Marmite episode, but I think it was the fact that, Ben, you came on first and expressed very negative opinions right up front, and then everybody had to kind of follow that. And whenever anybody tried to be a bit more positive about it, you would sit there and go, oh, but that was rubbish. And it was sort of like, you know, pronouncements from, you know, from the mountains.
From the Almighty.
From the Almighty, yeah.
Very apt.
That's the kind of way I like thinking of myself, Matthew, sometimes. So, yeah. No, to be honest with you, you're talking about the rings. I can't even remember that episode.
It's the one with the sun in it, and the sun died.
Oh,
and
is that one?
All
oh.
the singing.
And the leaf. Yeah.
Oh,
and the leaf and all the singing.
How you brought back all the bad memories.
That summed up the story pretty much, really, didn't it?
I'd hear well, that it was place where I'd forgotten about it, you see.
Yeah. And,
well, it was a story all about memories, so.
That's what that, again.
No, look, at the end of the day, I'm not interested in sitting here and having a who's the biggest Doctor Who fan discussion. You know, at the end of the day, I like a program, you like a program, Adam likes a program. Everybody who listens to this or reads the Facebook page likes a certain program. And we all like it different amounts. We all like different bits of it. We all like it for different reasons.
Yeah.
Well, we get together to have a conversation about it. And yes, sometimes I am a little bit overbearing, but that's because if people won't talk, I will.
Yes, I know that. As Louise Jameson find
quiet,
out.
I'll say something.
Yeah.
And sometimes it won't be exactly what I mean.
No.
See, Adam knows.
Yeah, well, that's a funny thing. I think it's a trouble. I mean, I understand you, Ben. Obviously, I've known you for a long time. So I understand when you're being ironic or you know, sarcastic or just being silly. Yeah. So I understand that. But I then obviously I'm probably expecting all the listeners to understand that as well. And they obviously clearly don't. And I apologize. Obviously that's partly my fault, but I apologize for that. But I still, personally when listening, because I have to listen to every single show probably three or four times. I enjoy everybody's input to the show. I enjoy the feedback we get. I don't enjoy the negative blooming comments we've had on certain people writing stuff on the American iTunes reviews.
Which while we're here, I will apologize for having brought.
Oh no, it's not your fault. You didn't write the reviews, Matthew. It's just the fact that
It had been a couple of weeks since I had read those reviews. I hadn't realized they were as negative as they ended up being. Mm. Had I realized that they were as negative as they ended up being, I wouldn't have said anything about them.
Honestly,
I surely wouldn't.
I would have eventually found them because periodically I do go around checking reviews on iTunes because you can just click the flag and change your thing and you can review what people have been writing about it. It's not your fault. I would have found out and I would have been just as angry at whatever time. But like other people have said, it doesn't matter because we've got so many listeners that do like the show. The couple of people that can take the time to write rubbish. It's up to them, and I can say that now because they're clearly not listening to the show because they hate it so much. But never mind.
The thing is, and I think this is something that, you know, everyone has to bear in mind who does any form of broadcasting, whether it be podcasting, radio, or television, is the fact that you're not going to please everyone all of the time.
I accept this.
And
yes.
Not everybody is going to like you.
Exactly.
This is something you have to get very, very quickly.
And
when
that
you
happens.
Work
the more listeners you get,
20 years.
The more listeners you get, the more that
the
is
more
true.
The more you get, the more that won't like you. There's, you know, look at Howard Stern. You know, back in the 90s, basically, when, you know, he was coming through and becoming the big shock jock that he was, the main reason people listen to him is to find out what he was going to say next to annoy them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Chris Moores, you know, Chris Moores was very much like that when he first started out. Before he went on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show, he did the pre-breakfast show. It was a Radio 1 Breakfast Show that came on before the main breakfast show, and that was his show, and that's how he ended up with the breakfast show. And that was very much what Moyes
did. He went to Drive Time first. But
did he? I do apologise. But I remember his show being, he used to get naked girls in the studio and things like that, which was very Howard Sternish.
He did copy Howard Stern quite a bit.
He did,
you know, in parts. But that's the thing. The more you get, the more people who will write negative stuff about you. You've just got to suck it up.
Yeah.
If it's constructive, I've got no problems. If it gets a little bit personal, when it starts getting a little bit personal.
Yeah.
With the advent of Facebook and what you call it, and all the social medias in the last 10 years,
yeah,
that does happen a bit more because people think that they can hide behind some sort of faceless veil that is the internet and say whatever they want, offending people or upsetting people. I'm not saying that was the case with Thomas. You know, he hasn't offended or upset me. he's annoyed me a little bit with his views about, with what he said about me and some of the things, which
the
is completely
things.
Unnecessary, considering the chap doesn't know me.
Yeah.
So to start drawing dispersions about my character from, you know, an hour's he's heard me on the podcast, I think is a little bit short-sighted. But, you know, he's allowed his opinions about me. I'm allowed my opinions about him. We all are about Doctor Who. And if people don't like it, then, you know, the old adage is if you don't like it, don't listen. But obviously, we want everyone to listen.
Yes. But anyway, thanks, everybody. I think we've run the subject into the ground. It's been good fun, I have to say.
Think we've discussed it enough. I think we need to go over the points again.
I think we've already gone over the points about 15 times. I think that's probably quite enough.
I don't think I've quite clearly made my point.
It's quite funny that you're talking about sport analogies. I seem to remember you being a big fan of baseball, and that's a very much American sport.
Yeah, well, I don't watch it as much anymore because... it's not the baseball season at the moment.
Oh, well, there you go.
But
then,
it starts
fair enough.
In 2-3 weeks.
It's just a shame that you used the Manchester United Fergie and Moyes analogy, and it would have been quite good if you could have just helped the American listeners out, used a baseball analogy. I bet you can't think of any, can you?
There was once a manager of a baseball team who was good, and then he left, and then the team were rubbish.
Really?
There you go.
you could always have used the Brian Clough at Leeds United in 1974 might have been a good example.
Oh, Matthew,
as well.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant knowledge, my friend.
Yes.
Well, I only know that because of David Peace's novel, The Damned United, and
that's
the
great,
movie version of it with Michael Sheen. So.
But still, to actually... Yeah, no, that would have been a very good analogy to use as well. Yes. And Brian Clough's troubles up at Leeds for... 3.5 weeks.
And another film well worth watching.
Days.
Yeah.
If you're not a football fan, it doesn't matter. Damned United, brilliant film. Anyway, right.
Brilliant film.
I think that's enough for this week. We'll be back next week when we'll be looking at Sunmakers on a Sunday. Until then, thank you for listening to the show. Thanks for coming back on, Ben. And goodbye.
Bye.
So long and thanks for all the fish.
And chips.
You are listening to Adventures in Time, Space and Music Master.
Excuse me, my lady. The people you wish to speak to are here.
Good, Herman. Show them in.
Yes, my lady.
Oh! I say... What a wonderful butler. He's so violent. Hello. I've called the doctor. That's Romana. That's Duggan. You must be the Countess Scaglione. And this is clearly a delightful Louis Cam's chair. May I sit in it?
I say, haven't they worn well?
Thank you, Herman. That'll be all.
The only reason you were brought here was to explain exactly why you stole my bracelet.
Ah, well, that's my job. You see, I'm a thief. This is Romana. She's my accomplice. And this is Duggan. He's a detective who's been kind enough to catch me. That's his job. You see, our two lines of work dovetail beautifully.
Very interesting.
Yes.
I was rather under the impression that Mr. Duggan was following me.
Oh. Well, you're a beautiful woman, probably. And Duggan was trying to sum up the courage to ask you out to dinner, weren't you, Duggan?
How very curious. Two thieves enter the Louvre Gallery and come out with a bracelet. Couldn't you think of anything more interesting to steal?
Well, I just thought it was awfully pretty. A terribly unusual design. Of course, it would have been much nicer to have stolen one of the pictures, but I've tried that before and all sorts of alarms go off, which disturbs the concentration.
Yes, it would. So you stole the bracelet simply because it's pretty?
Well, I think it is, don't you?
Yeah.
My dear, I don't think he's as stupid as he seems.
My dear, nobody could be as stupid as he seems.
Oh.
This interview is at an end.
Good. Well, we'll be off. A quick stagger up the Champs-Élysées. Perhaps a bite at Maxim's. What do you think, Romana?
I think a rather better idea would be if Herman were to lock you into the cellar. I should hate to lose contact with such fascinating people.
Ah, Duggan! What are you doing, for heaven's sake? That's a Louis Cairns.
But you're not going to...
Just behave like a civilized guest. I do beg your pardon, Count.
Thank you.
Now, Herman, if you'd just be kind enough to show us to our cellar, we'd be terribly grateful. Do come along, my good chap.
Dr. Phil again with another installment of Adventures in Time, Space, and Music. In this segment, we'll be looking at the music of Dudley Simpson, using The City of Death as an example culminating all his work from the final seasons working on Doctor Who. Dudley Simpson was born in 1922 in Melbourne, Australia. Simpson composed for many genres, but is best known for his incidental music on Doctor Who, specifically in the 1960s and 70s. He only appeared on screen in the series once, as the conductor of the Music Hall 1977 serial The Talons of Wang Chiang. On this occasion, he had to receive a special fee through the Musicians' Union, as he was not a member of the Actors' Union, Equity. During the period of 1977 to 1979, Dudley Simpson scored every story of the Graham Williams era, including some very strong stories, including Horror of Fang Rock, The Invisible Enemy, Image of the Fendal, The Sunmakers, The Invasion of Time, the Key to Time season, as well as season 17, culminating in the score to the serial 5H, story 105, called The City of Death. While not well-received at the time critically, it boasted some impressive audience figures. ITV was not broadcasting due to union action, and has since been acclaimed a classic story, not just for its direction and acting, but also for its strong script and its musical score.
Thank you.
Typically, in Simpson's scores from the 1970s, he would often use session musicians, brass, timpani, and low wind such as the bass clarinet, in combination with electronic sounds from the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. This is what is referred to as the classic Doctor Who sound of the 1970s, specifically from the Philip Hinchcliffe and Graham Williams eras. City of Death is unique in his output, as the score uses more acoustic instruments to evoke specifically the French flavor of the Parisian setting. His score, while seemingly traditional in the settings of the basement laboratory and the dawn of life on Earth, is juxtaposed by cinematic score highlighting the flute and alto flute, as well as soprano and clarinet, drawing on turn-of-the-century French music for its inspiration. This music accompanies sweeping shots of the Doctor, Romana, and Duggan, surrounded by French landmarks such as Notre-Dame Cathedral, the Arc de Triomphe, the Eiffel Tower, and the Louvre. It is noteworthy that there is a heightened role of the piano in the score, specifically an upright piano, giving the score a French cabaret sort of atmosphere. City of Death is one of the few times in the classic series that Simpson's music takes center stage and drives the action and setting. In a season that felt inflation and union action cripple production of the show, it's impressive to see a Doctor Who story that attracted an inspired cast. From Julian Glover's icy Count Scarlione / Scaroff, to Catherine Schell's Countess, to the comedic brilliance of Tom Chadwin's Duggan. This was a cast at the top of its game, and while Tom Baker's excesses abound here, it's one of the few times in season 17 where they feel completely inspired and appropriate. Being the first Doctor Who story shot abroad, the film sequences make this story feel epic, and additionally, David Agnew's script, well, Douglas Adams and Graham Williams' rewrite of David Fisher's A Gamble of Time, is imaginative and probably the best Doctor Who script of the late 1970s, if not the entire Graham Williams era. Filled with great wit and humor, it is excellent commentary on the value of art. Romana sees art simply in its role to depict its subject. Count Scarlione sees the theft of the Mona Lisa as a means to an end to pay for his experiments with time. The Countess, she sees it as a symbol of status. It's left to the Doctor to educate the audience on the true value of art. This is one of the best morals ever depicted in Doctor Who stories and would not return again until the 2010 Richard Curtis script Vincent and the Doctor. Unfortunately, as with many of Dudley Simpson's scores, there are no commercial releases. In their foresight, the BBC did not retain the master audio tapes for the majority of Simpson's scores.
There's no one interested in history!
Like the destruction of the master reels of classic-era black-and-white stories, this is indeed a saddening reality of fans of the classic series. Nonetheless, I would highly recommend the 2005 DVD release, one that excels before Too Entertained took over the DVD range. This two-disc set is packed with some witty extras that capture all of the strengths of this story. The documentaries highlighted the aspects of production, while new series writers Rob Shearman and Stephen Moffat offer fabulous commentary on the legacy of City of Death. As a final note, I think it best to leave the closing comments to the most famous guest stars in the story, John Cleese and Eleanor Braun, from the close of Episode 4.
Eve Hutchard.
Yes.
And I see what you mean. Divorced from its function and seen purely as a piece of art. Its structure of line and colour is curiously counterpointed by the redundant vestiges of its function.
And since it has no call to be here, the art lies in the fact that it is here.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.